got a helicopter to pick up a ramp and take me up to 5,000 feet. And I rode down the ramp and did 4 backflips and then got away from the bike. It burned in and I was able to kind of get under canopy and fly my new canopy skills and land right in front of the camera. So we got the whole shot in one take because there was multiple scenes. You had to do the exit of the ramp, then the under canopy stuff, and then the landing. And we were able to get it all in one take. So
that's wild.
It was cool. You know, obviously the hardest part was everyone else's take on it and their opinions on it.
Right.
And so you have to overcome that and stay, you know, use the technique of asking my soul whether I'm worthy of it. And I literally, when I'm up on the ramp about to roll in, that Paul check method, I checked in with my soul, asked it, am I worthy of doing this? Is this okay for me to do right now? And I got that yes answer. So I was able to fearlessly just put the fear behind me and just focus on the right balance, the technique, you know, be in the moment. And it went off without a hitch. So
that's amazing. Stuff works.
Welcome to Living 4D with Paul Check. Today's guest is legendary freestyle motocross stunt rider, Robbie Madison.
Hello, and thank you to all of you for joining me to celebrate my 150th episode of Living 4D with Paul Check. I wanted to share a very special, unique, highly accomplished guest that is a living example to us all for this special episode. And I chose someone that is and always has been a very impressive human being to me. Our guest today is Robbie Madison, a world-famous motorcycle stuntman that has broken all of Evel Knievel's records and much more. Robbie holds the world record for the longest ramp-to-ramp jump on a motorcycle. He is the inventor of the first motorcycle that can be ridden on water. If you haven't seen his amazing video footage of him riding this motorcycle, go to YouTube and search Robbie Madison Pipe Dream and get ready to have your mind blown. He jumped onto and off of a 10-story building on live TV in Las Vegas. Robbie served as a James Bond stunt double in the movie Skyfall. He is the guy jumping roof to roof on a motorcycle. It's quite an exciting scene. He has a long, amazing list of accomplishments in such events as the X Games. He is the father of 3 boys and the husband to his beautiful, amazing wife, Amy. He immigrated with his wife from Australia to the U.S., and put it all on the line to develop his career as a professional motorcycle stuntman and has never looked back. I have been a therapist, conditioning coach, and consultant to Robbie Madison since 2007, and as you will learn, I've helped him through multiple career and even life-threatening injuries, erecting the phoenix to fly again. And if that's not enough, Robbie has been clinically dead 5 times in his professional career, and we talk about his experiences with death. Robbie has not only excelled in his profession, he applied the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual teachings I passed on to him and is a living example to us all. He is a man that I deeply love, respect, appreciate, and feel blessed to have as a friend and client. If you'd like to see my dialogue with Robbie and some video footage of him performing his amazing stunts, feel free to enjoy this podcast on my Living 4D with Paul Check YouTube channel. Enjoy this thrill ride of a dialogue on life, career, reaching our true potential, overcoming our fears, and living and loving fully with Robbie Madison. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Living 4D with Paul Check. It is my 150th episode, and to make it special, I had to find somebody super cool and super special and highly accomplished, and I know exactly who I was going to reach for, and here he is, Robbie Madison. Welcome to Living 4D, buddy.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's a blessing to be here.
Oh, my God. We were discussing, I haven't seen you since I rehabbed you from your heart and rib injury.
Yeah, since you saved my career. I've been off busy again, thanks to you.
Yeah, good. Yes, you've come to me very beat up from bad accidents a few times, and we've rebuilt Robbie and got him out there. Before we start getting into all that stuff, though, because we'll have a chance to talk all about it, I want to tell people who you are. Robbie Madison is not only one of the coolest guys I've ever met in my life, and I say that from my heart, Robbie. You are amazing. Robbie has broken all of Evel Knievel's records. He's a stunt man on a motorcycle. He's the most amazing jumper. He's set many amazing records. He's the world record holder for the longest jump on a motorcycle ramp to ramp in the world. He's the inventor of a motorcycle that you may have seen this on YouTube or something, but he's invented a motorcycle that he rides on top of the water. And he's got skis on the front wheel, and the back wheel has like a dune paddle. And he goes so fast, he actually stays on top of the water. It's the most badass thing ever. Where can people see that?
It's on YouTube. If you type in Robbie Madison Pipe Dream.
Pipe Dream, that's right. That's a beautiful piece of film too. Whoever filmed that did an amazing job.
Yeah, they won all kinds of awards. They did a great job. It was the team at DC Shoes.
It's like you're right there.
Yeah, they did a great job.
It's like you're right there with you.
Yeah.
He jumped off a 10-story building. I saw that. That was in Las Vegas, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was live on ESPN 2009.
I watched that. That was wild.
Thank you.
I'm like, there's my buddy. I'm like, Robbie, please don't give me more work.
Actually, you helped me get the confidence to do that jump. I was really lost at the time, and that's when we met. I was training with Ryan Hughes, and you know, I knew I wanted to do this thing, and I could feel inside of my body was telling me to do it, but everyone I spoke to said it was a bad idea, and you taught me how to connect with my consciousness and ask my soul whether I was worthy of it or not, and it guided me through it safely, so thank you.
Oh, man, that was, yeah, you know, when I was working with you, my soul came to me and said, you need to teach Robbie how to connect to the elements so that he knows what the wind is going to do, what the water is going to do, and teach him how to talk to nature and let his soul guide him. And because, you know, your job is extremely dangerous. And so I taught you that. And, you know, the thing about you that is different than most people, you actually use it.
I do. I use it so much. And I remember when I was turning to the ramp, you know, 300,000 people were there. It was watched, you know, obviously millions of people across the world watching live. And I remember I stopped and my mind was clear because you taught me how to clear my mind.
Yes.
And I was just aware of the wind on my face.
Yes.
And just that was the only thing I was aware of was the wind on my face, my heart beating, my breath, and the fact of the physics I was about to deal with. Like the crowd was gone. It was just me and my motorcycle. It was a very powerful moment. I remember it never happened to me before, but as I was putting my helmet on, tears were leaping out of my eyeballs like a foot, like on a cartoon.
Wow.
And I wasn't crying, but it was just all the emotions. Yes. And everything was my eyes were just jumping, tears were jumping out of my eyes. But my wife said, you don't have to do this, you know, we can go back to Australia and live a normal life, you know, you don't have to feel this pressure. And I was like, I looked her in the eyes and I'm like, no, I have to do this. This is like, and now looking back, it's overcoming that fear and learning what I learned there has like led me on to do all these other things and believing in myself and my journey. And, you know, asking my soul whether I should pursue this bike on the water. Cause at the time it was like people thought I was going down a dead end road and going to sacrifice my career, but it actually became some of my most perfect work. So.
Oh my God. When I saw that video, I was just blown away. Pipe Dream. Look up Robbie Madison Pipe Dream and get ready to be blown away. And that's just a small sample. If you want more, you can watch the James Bond movie Skyfall.
Yeah.
And the guy racing through the hotel or the apartment building there and jumping off the rooftops is Robbie Madison. And it was so funny because we were just hanging out and I was just showing Robbie the place and showing him my water charger and the stone area. And my phone rings and it's Laird Hamilton. And so Laird, who is considered to be the greatest big wave surfer in the world, got to meet Robbie by phone because he's heard about you forever, probably. And then Laird says to me and Robbie, do you guys know what Papa Wheelie means? And of course, Robbie being the stunt man, him and I both think it means ride the back wheel. But Laird says, no, that's not what it means. It means Papa Wheelie, which was Evel Knievel's nickname. So he's the father of the wheelie, and so Laird taught
educated
Robbie
me
what Papa Wheelie means.
Thank you, Laird Hamilton. That was amazing, man. When you said a Les on the phone, I thought, I only know one Laird, and then I read your phone, Laird Hamilton. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So that's super cool to connect with him. Hopefully we cross paths again.
Well, Laird's got a very distinctive voice. Once you've heard Laird's voice, you can never miss him because he's, you know, Laird's like an oak tree. He's just... when you meet him in person, he's 6'2", 220 pounds of total stud.
Yeah, he is.
And him and I used to trash each other in the gym, man. And so you are also the father of three beautiful boys, and you're married to your beautiful wife, Amy. So you have a full life, man.
Yeah, I'm very blessed. You know, the boys and my wife is the best thing I've gone for me. So it's been pretty amazing to come out of all this, you know, to set my sights on this journey as a kid. And, mm-hmm. you know, you manifest what you believe. And it's crazy. I saw this lifestyle as a kid and never thought I'd be worthy of it. Now here I am on the, it's all came true. And to have the wife and the support and the love of the family, just, it's just so you know, it's just amazing for me as a to step back and look at it from a different perspective and see where I'm at. It's beautiful, and it's like, even it motivates me to stay on this path.
Yeah. And we're both living our dreams. We've both been living our dreams for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
How many years has it been since I've been working with you? I can't even remember.
I think like 13 years.
Yeah. And you've come to me with some badass injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. You totally balanced me out and you've put me together. I came to you the first time with like a totally unbalanced system, and I was had a whole bunch of different pains and aches because of it. And you've helped me kind of become pain-free with all the injuries I've had. It'd be almost impossible to think you'd be pain-free at 40 years old, but here I am.
That's amazing. And I taught you how to use cold water therapies before it was even popular, didn't I?
Yes.
Nobody knew about it. There was no Wim Hof, nothing. And I was teaching people about ice baths and cold showers 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? And everything that's starting to come popular now, I was teaching people way back then.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny to watch it.
It's awesome. I was telling my filmer on the way up here that you're like the founder of a lot of this stuff, and just your teachings and your knowledge is it's awesome. It's guided me, and I'm so stoked that we're still doing this, man.
Yeah,
still learning from you.
Yeah, I'm still amazed at you. I learned from you how to deal with risk and overcome anything, because the things that you do are just mind freaking boggling, and you're preparing for some wild event. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I people that follow me will see I've been skydiving a lot. I've been flying airplanes, and this is all part of my training to do in my next big stunt. Along the way, obviously learning how to skydive, I've realized I can do a bunch of other things. So I did a stunt that's about to release next month where I got a helicopter to pick up a ramp and take me up to 5,000 feet. And I rode down the ramp and did 4 backflips and then got away from the bike. It burned in, and I was able to kind of get under canopy and fly my new canopy skills and land right in front of the camera. So we got the whole shot in one take, because there was multiple scenes. You had to do the exit of the ramp, then the under canopy stuff, and then the landing. And we were able to get it all in one take. So
that's wild.
It was cool. You know, obviously the hardest part was everyone else's take on it and their opinions on it,
right?
And so you have to overcome that and stay, you know, use a technique of asking my soul whether I'm worthy of it. And I literally, when I'm up on the ramp about to roll in, that Paul check method, I checked in with my soul, asked it, am I worthy of doing this, is this okay for me to do right now? And I got that yes answer, so I was able to fearlessly just put the fear behind me and just focus on the right balance, the technique, you know, be in the moment, and it went off without a hitch. So
that's amazing. Stuff works. You know, opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one, but not a lot of them smell very good, do they?
Yeah.
So you kind of have to learn. I've been, you know, as you can imagine, for my whole career, people telling me that won't work. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't say that. People aren't going to like you if you do that. I'm like, I'm not here to be liked. I'm here to tell the truth. My God.
Yeah. And if you're consistent, then people start to listen. You know, they might think you're a whack job at first, but after some time and some consistency and it working and you're making those gains forwards, then it's, you have to stop and listen and take it on. So
yeah,
it's, it might seem crazy, you know, because some people can think it's all simple, but like, you know, everything's connected. And if one thing's off, whether it's, could be anything from your diet to your training, ultimately your head has to be in it when you go for it. And for me, it's, I never thought as a kid that I'd have, you know, cause it's easy to kind of get out of sync and get in your head before doing something, especially watching the Olympic Games. Now you see people that you thought were going to crush it and the pressure gets to them. Whatever, everyone's in their own situation, but I've been able to get rid of that pressure and stay in the moment through shedding all the BS and being able to just come back to the spirit, to the technique, to the mind, the body.
Yeah. Plus, you've got all that equipment to keep an eye on too. It's not just you. You got to make sure tire pressures are right, nothing's leaking, everything's tight. I mean, whenever you're working with equipment, there's a lot of other opportunities for things to go wrong if it's not done right.
100%. And it's just, I mean, I think people can relate to that in no matter what you do in life. Like even setting up a podcast here, it's not a one-man job. It's always a team effort, and everything I do is a team effort. And, you know, there's certain people of my team that are for sure being critical parts of why I'm still here, you know, to keep me safe. So it's, you know, I've seen a good friend of mine, Alex Harville, passed away just recently and just unfortunately got himself in a trap where he was trying to, you know, deal with the pressures of trying to do what he knew he was capable of, and maybe the ego took over trying to prove something.
Yeah.
And ultimately he passed away, which is really sad for him and his family and his kids. It breaks my heart. And so I want to keep being mindful of them, give back and help the family out. But it's also something to be aware of and to pass on to people that, you know, you got to be doing it for the right reasons. It can't all just be about proving yourself. I mean, yes. What I've done, I've had to prove myself, but along the way, I've had to let opportunities go and know when it's right and when it's not right. And I think, yeah, I have to put the ego out. You know, I think it's comes down to, you could probably better explain it, you know, but when you're at that level, it's one thing to prove to people, but it's another thing to do it the right way and to be able to achieve what you know you're capable of. Sometimes you have to kind of take a step back and be like, all right, I need to get everyone. It's a team effort. And the more stuff I do, the more appreciative I am of my team, because, you know, if I didn't have a film, I'd be worrying about all these other things that takes you away from focusing on what's important. So it's nice to be able to focus on my path and have everyone else focus on their path, and together we create something that's amazing.
Yeah, you can't do anything meaningful in the world by yourself, and that's what I call having a dream team. You know, if you don't really have a lot of love and respect and connection for your dream team, then you always have like problems around you that can distract you from, you know, where your focus needs to be. One of the things that came to my mind is I remember when you jumped the London Bridge, and I think I was working on you close to that time, because I remember actually seeing the event, and I didn't know you were going to do a backflip in the middle of the damn thing. So I'm watching Robbie get ready to jump the London Bridge, and, you know, it's a drawbridge, so it's up real high, and I'm like, okay, this is pretty tricky business. That's a long jump. I don't know. How far was that?
It wasn't too far, but it was obviously over the times, the Thames, I believe it's called.
Yeah, Thames River, yeah.
But, yeah, when it opens up, the tricky part about that was, like, we opened up. I also put a ramp on there to give me the extra height I needed. And then when I backflipped, obviously I'm looking at the sky, which is pitch black. It was 3 a.m. and when I rotated around, the road was black too.
Right.
But luckily we had some branding and some white stripes there that kind of, like, I was able to pick up on it. And so essentially the risk was losing your sense
of where you're at in space, yeah.
But it was cool, you know, to be able to jump that bridge. I got to do it twice. So the first time I did a right setup trick, and then the second time I did the backflip. And, it was just a great experience. I remember the police officer saying, you know, after you jumped the other side, I had to get a police escort around over the actual London Bridge, because I jumped London Tower Bridge.
Uh-huh.
So I got the escort around over London Bridge, and he said, no playing around on the way back, no wheelies or nothing. You have to ride, you know, perfectly. So I did that. And on the second time after I backflipped it, I thought, I'm not going to get a chance to ride through London ever again, so I'm going to break the rules this time. So I wheelie just slowly behind the cop, and I'm just sitting on my back wheel behind him, thinking like he doesn't see me, and I'm just slow wheeling, and I put it down, and we pulled up. He's like, hey, come in. He's like, did you pop a wheelie? And I was like, oh, yes, I'm sorry. He goes, that was friggin' cool, man. He gave you a high five, so that was cool.
Just to leave a little treat for the listeners, when you're facing when you have to confront fear dead on like that, what can you share with the listeners as a technique to just center themselves? How do you do it?
So I'm always mindful of, like, and through the meditation, which, you know, I learned through you and Ryan Hughes, you know, it's nice to sit in silence and just give that mind the time to just quieten down. So I did that every morning, you know, routinely every day. And I was able to sit there with my mind off, which was the first start to it. I think a lot of people find that hard to do, but I think if you just, well, the practice is, and you know this best, but if you sit there and you just allow the thoughts, and your goal is to sit quietly, and when those thoughts come in, not beating yourself up about it, but just, you know, being aware of it, dismissing it, saying you don't want it here. And the more you do that and dismiss the thoughts, then the longer the period between them popping up becomes. And I was able to get, you know, good hour of quietness, and I picture my mind like a weather pattern, you know. And at first it seems like it was a real dark, stormy night with the oceans crashing and the wind, and it was really violent. And I was able to, like, meditate until I could see just this perfect sunny oasis with palm trees and white sand.
Perfect.
And so I was able to get to that point of just stillness and beauty. And so I was able to kind of, once you're able to do that, then when you need to, you can kind of go back there and be like, oh, yeah, there it is, you know. And so you're turning all that stuff off, which is very powerful. And then the other thing I remind myself is the fear is just what you're thinking, you know. And it's good to always deal with it prior to doing the stunt.
Yeah.
So I go through what could go wrong and all that. But once you, it's good to do that. But once you go through like all the things that could go wrong, you realize, well, I've already checked my tire pressures. So I know that that's not going to happen. I know that the bridge is sturdy. So once you do all your thorough background checks, you're able to dismiss all these things that might, could have gone wrong if you didn't have the mindfulness to oversee them. But once you've checked every box, it comes down to like everything's good. Now you just need to get your head right. And then, so then it'll dismiss all the what ifs kind of go. And then essentially it comes down to your body technique, reading the winds and the weather, because essentially that could throw you off. If you jump in a side wind, it's going to push you across 5 feet. So sometimes you might need to counteract that or be aware of it. And so once I'm able to turn all those things off and it comes down to just man and machine in the moment, I remind myself, this is what I wanted to do as a kid and this is the dream that you had. So if you're going to do it, now's the time to, if there's ever time to man up and just not be a pussy and put those things to bed, it's like now, So I just don't let them, I just like put it out there that this is what I wanted. If it's going to take me down, well, then that's just the way it's meant to go. But I believe I'm here. I've done everything right to create this situation. So now's the time of figuring out whether I go on from this point or whether I don't. And that's, that was my mindset when I jumped on and off the building in Las Vegas. Tears were jumping out of my eyeballs. The pressure was there. And ultimately I just thought, this is what I've been working for. This is what I've trained to do. I was strong as an ox. I was totally calibrated. You know, I used your training methods with Ryan Hughes and got myself to the best physical,
shape
I'd ever been in. So physically I was ready. Mentally I was really ready because I'd meditated and got my mind really still. And ultimately the only questions I had was mechanically something could always go wrong, but I let that go because I had a mechanic and I just trusted him. And so there's a lot of trust, but if you've done everything you can do in your power and you've trained for something and you're worthy of it, then the goal is to just let go of the fear and believe that you've done all your prep work right and you're worthy of it. And then you just need to go fearlessly into that and cross the line. And it is tough, but it's, I think it's something that people can adopt to no matter what they're doing, whether it's an interview or, confronting some situation. It's like,
Illness or a death in the family or, a loss of a job. I mean, there's fear and challenge shows up in many, many ways, but if you look back on your life and say, okay, where did I grow the most? When everything was hunky-dory and I didn't have any financial stress and I had food on the table, or did I grow more when I was, the shit was hitting the fan and I really had to dig into myself? And I don't know anybody that says, oh, I grew more when everything was just fine.
Setbacks are powerful, right? You have a setback, maybe you did some things wrong. So it's a chance to be aware of them and have a different strategy, a different approach.
And be brave enough to think outside of the box. Einstein says you can't solve a problem with the same thinking that created it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people get themselves in trouble because they use the same beliefs and the same behaviors over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yep.
And that's never a good way to be successful. Simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think if you think that you've got it all and you know everything, then you're setting yourself up to be smacked in the face by something that you didn't take into account. So being able to stay mindfully open and just aware of everything that's going on and see the power and the setbacks. It's definitely my biggest growth has come from my biggest thing was trying to feel worthy of what I was getting myself into, because at the end of this, like, it's one thing to set up for a stunt and all that, but to have a positive outcome to it takes that moment of personal performance to get it. And if you're able to, guide through and get that high, then it's not really that gratifying at the time, but it's the journey involved to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And once you overstep that, get past that thing, then it's like, all right, all my tools got me to this point, and then you can kind of use those to get you to the next point, and they compound, and you're taking the learnings that got you to the one spot, and it gets darker. Obviously I've had the times where I've had these crazy highs, and then it's kind of like you need to reinvent yourself, because my business goes from thinking of these new things. So it's not like it's just order more product. It's like, all right, you need to start from scratch again.
Yes, you do have to reinvent yourself, and you have so many ways, very beautifully. There's a saying I teach all of my students: the pain is seldom where the actual problem is.
For example, I've seen many cases of rotator cuff problems that wouldn't heal even after surgery. But what most doctors and therapists overlook is that the right shoulder is under influence from the liver and the left shoulder the stomach. Once we apply the principles of detoxification, support digestion, and clear parasites, presto, shoulders start healing and working beautifully again, which is always a shock to the therapists and doctors when they find out how their past client was helped by a Czech professional. After this past year, the clients we see will demonstrate this even more than ever due to using fast and often sugary foods, coffee, alcohol, smoking, and drugs as coping mechanisms while exercising less and spending more time staring at screens. But if you learn to see people holistically, like I teach my students in Holistic Lifestyle Coaching Level 1, you begin to see the true source of our illnesses and injuries. HLC 1 teaches you many essential approaches to health and well-being, such as how to assess what key body systems are under too much stress and how to restore balance, the importance of identifying a realistic dream goal or objective that inspires each individual to stick to their healing program and make the short and long-term changes that are necessary, my universally applicable 1-2-3-4 formula for assessing and correcting challenges, how to breathe optimally to enhance energy levels and mental clarity, how to use gentle movements to work in and enhance life force energy and support optimal immune function, how the function and health of the soil that food is grown in influences all systems of the body, including our mental emotional stability, and much more. HLC 1 is just a small part of what we teach our Czech Academy students, our education system for elite trainers and health professionals. Gavin Jennings and I designed the Academy to take you from wherever you are right now, even if you have no fitness or health education, to being one of the best holistic health and performance professionals on this planet. And as a Czech Academy student, you'll be able to help a lot of people reach their health goals in ways you never imagined. There is, in my opinion, nothing more rewarding and meaningful in life than helping other people look, feel, and live better. We are now accepting applications into the Czech Academy, so whether you're wanting to change your career or add a truly effective new dimension to your current skill set, now is the time to apply. Go to chekinstitute.com/L4D Academy. That's chekinstitute.com/L4D Academy. Let's make the world a better place together. Where can people see that Las Vegas jump, because that was a mind blower?
Yeah, it's, if you Google YouTube Robbie Madison New Year's Eve, it'll come up.
That one had me buzzing just watching you do that. I'm like, Jesus, it made my asshole pucker up. Holy yeah. Shit, here he goes. This is fucking. I'm like, okay, Robbie, I'm sending you my love and my wings right now, but you did it like a pro, and I'm just like, holy shit, this guy's amazing.
That's almost a trick where you're like, oh, it's a holy grail, I've done my job. But deep inside of me as a little kid, I always said, and I don't know why I said this, but interviewers have said, well, what's your last, you know, when's enough enough? You know, it's, a lot of interviewers have been really inquisitive as to how I think. And I think, and I've always said, when I can do what Evel Knievel didn't do, then I'll be happy to hang my boots up. So He jumped Snake River Canyon and didn't make it to the other side. And I was just there last week, and it was so powerful to be there. You know, we did an interview there, and I was at the jump site, and essentially that's my dream. I want to go across that thing. I think, you know, my name's Robert as well as Evel Knievel's is a Robert too, and his son's Robbie, and I'm a Robbie. And so
that's wild correlation. I didn't realize that.
And you know what? Special thing for me was I went to Evel Knievel's funeral, and you taught me to speak, you know, to the spirits and to, you know, to speak to the soul and all that stuff. So when I stood in front of Evel Knievel, I just said a prayer, and I thanked him for what he's done and created, you know, and created this opportunity for all of us, people like myself and the Pastranas and all these people in action sports to do what I've done. He's really the grandfather of it all. So I thanked him for what he's done. And I said, you know, with your blessing, I want to take the torch from where you left it and take it to a higher height. And I felt this cold energy come right through me. All the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I felt his spirit go into me. And
that's beautiful. And man, so, it's moving me inside just hearing about it.
Yeah, it's so I know he's on my side. His spirit's with me. So it's so it empowers me to I don't feel like the path I'm on is one of I don't feel like I'm out to commit suicide. I know I'm going to do what I set out to do, and there's some challenges along the way, but it's just nice to know that I'm spiritually aligned, and this is more of a spiritual quest for me as much as it is a physical one. And it's a journey of my life, you know. It's that little boy in the classroom that when the teacher asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I wanted to be Evel Knievel. It's like, it's happening.
It's more than happening, man. I think even Evel Knievel's butthole would pucker up if he's seen some of the shit you've done. He would go, wow, that guy's crazier than me.
We're teammates, man. He's me.
He's flying with you, baby.
Exactly.
You know, I just got to say again, I'm so proud of you because I've taught a lot of elite athletes the same stuff I taught you, but you're one of the few that actually listened and did it. And I'm really glad it was you because your life depends upon it.
It does.
It's one thing to be a great football player or hockey player. And I've worked with, as you know, everybody from pretty much every sport. And, you know, when I realized that you were practicing those things, you know, and I also painted that painting for you because I had a vision that came to me for you.
Robbie Sky.
Yeah, Robbie Sky. And so I just, my soul said, you need to paint this for Robbie. So he carries this energy with him. And so
it sits above my office. I look at it every day.
That's amazing. And, you know, it just gives me such gratification to know that I somehow contributed to your life that way. And
100%.
It's quite emotional for me.
My guru.
You're my guru. That's funny. Rob, one day Robbie's going to get a call from me and I'm like, Robbie, my life's falling apart. What the fuck do I do? He goes, well, just clear your head. Talk to your soul. I'll guide you through it. Oh, shit. Can you share a little bit about that injury I rehabbed you from, that last one? That was a real scary one.
Yeah.
You know, I could tell the story, but it would be better to come from you. And I'm not telling it to brag. I'm just saying, you know, it's, I really want to share with the listeners how what you were told by all the different doctors and therapists you went to and how that could have ended your career.
It could have. You know, you figured it out on the spot quickly, but your training and understanding was like right on target. But I was doing the X Games and somewhere inside of me, I knew the X Games was kind of, it showed me it was corrupt, you know, a few years back when I'd had some, you know, some runs and done some stuff where I should have scored higher. And it's just a shame for action sports, you know, like I don't want to hate on anyone or any of the promoters because they do a fantastic job and everyone has a great heart. But I think the thing with our sport that's been overlooked is a fair judging system. It right. kind of comes down to the experts' opinion. And then those opinions are distorted because some of those experts
have favorites.
Yeah, well, their landlord is competing in the event.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's that kind of level. And so I just dealt with that, you know, where I should have won. And then they're like, oh, well, you get so much exposure doing. I asked the judges, why didn't I win? They're like, well, you get so much exposure doing all the other stuff you do. You're going to need to share it with these guys. I'm like, that's not what a competition is. So I kind of got dealt those cards. And when I knew what I was up against, I saw the judges at X Games. I kind of knew that I was just kind of fighting a one-way battle. And so after that experience, I kind of told myself I wasn't going to ride X Games anymore. Just too dangerous to go out there and put your whole heart and soul on something to be unfairly judged.
Right.
So I kind of went into this particular X Games knowing that I shouldn't compete. And there's an event that started. It's called Speed and Style. So it's the fastest guy around a supercross track. And inside the track, they have a freestyle jump, so you can do whatever trick you want to do. And then you're based off of how good your trick is combined with your lap time. And I grew up racing. I took 6 months to kind of brush up on my racing technique. And I went out and I was 3 seconds a lap quicker than the other quickest guy. Cause I was doing, there was a four jumps there was six jumps. There's three sets of doubles and I was jumping three and three.
Right.
So I was in and out of them real quick. Everyone else was going 2-2-2.
Right.
So I was making up a lot of time. And I kind of had it won and it just got ahead of me. I kind of made a fundamental mistake riding through the whoops. I decelerated inside on the whoops where it's timing's critical. Mm-hmm. My timing got out. My front wheel went in between one. It caught, went over the handlebars. I landed on my stomach and the bike followed me in.
Right.
And it did a bunch of internal injuries to all my organs, but it also broke my second rib on my left side of my chest and it pushed it into my aorta.
Yeah.
So I was in incredible pain. I went to the hospital. They did the scan. They said, look, your second rib's into your aorta. I'm like, sweet, let's get it out. And they go, we can't get it out. I'm like, what do you mean? Just cut me open and pull it out. And they said, we're not doing that because it's too risky. It's already pushing on your aorta. If we were to disrupt it and your aorta was to rupture, even on the operating table, we can't save you. You're done. So we're just going to leave it. You're going to have to let it heal, get softer, not so sharp on the edges. And once it heals over, you'll be able to, you know, get more of your mobility to be back. But until then, you need to do nothing. And your lifestyle is going to change. You can't do anything you're doing anymore. So, like, you might as well just kill me right here. I can't live like that. So I pleaded with them to do the surgery. They said it's not going to happen. So I called Paul Check and I called you and I said, hey, buddy, what's going on? I'm like, I could barely breathe. I was in so much pain. And you said, get down here as quick as possible. So I went down to see you. And literally within a few hours, I'm on your operating table. And you're like, all right, breathe out. You did an assessment. You're like, breathe out, and bring your left shoulder to your right hip, breathing out, and then breathe in, open it all up and stretch it out.
Yeah.
I did it three times, I think. And on the third time, that rib just popped straight out of my aorta, back in line. And you're like, well, that's that fixed. Now let's see what else is going on. You start digging into my organs and you found that my intestines had a fold in them and you got that out. So I hadn't eaten in 14 days. I got my appetite back. And after getting the rib in place, I went and healed perfectly and you saved my career. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, what had happened was the rib had broken off the costal cartilage. The rib joins to the costal cartilage and the impact pushed it right down into your aorta. So I used an old osteopathic technique. I don't know if you remember, but I would have you inhale. And then as you'd exhale, I'd load your rib cage up. And then as you start inhaling again, I let the rib cage go. And as you're opening, so the spring, I used the rib. So I used it as a spring. And then I used your inhalation to fill the lungs up. So I created a pressure inside your lung cavity that just pushed the rib right back into place. So it's an old technique I learned studying osteopathic approaches. But once I looked at you and checked everything out, and I also just connected to your soul and asked my soul, is it safe to take this rib off of his heart? And I got a big yes. So I'm like, well, God says yes, then I'd rather have him die trying. Even if I go to jail for killing him, at least I tried.
Awesome, man. Saved my life.
Yeah, I've had a lot of athletes come to me in that situation. Danny Way, as you know, was one of them, and he was in rough, rough shape. But, I just let Great Spirit guide me, and here we all are.
One of the things I've stressed with, and you probably see it now, is I twitch a lot, you told me, I thought I had Tourette's, but it's an emotional psychological issue I have. And it's a way of I've learned to deal with stress is it all builds up. And it's like you explained to me, it's like when you hit your thumb with a hammer, you got to shake it off.
Yes.
And so I'm getting all that tension inside. So my head shakes. So, my diaphragm gets really, really tense. Yeah. And it's like the relationship between your mother and your father and your emotional center. So that gets rock solid. And that creates this whole chain link of muscles getting stressed. My neck gets really tight and then I shake my head to kind of shake off that. And you told me what it was, and I'm still on that path of trying to figure it out. But when I haven't got stress on my life, I'm totally relaxed. I don't shake at all. Once I start getting around people that are that creates different energy, whatever, it starts, I think my neck goes forwards and it kind of starts a chain link of effects.
Yeah. And you're not as you're better than you used to be.
Better than I used to be, for sure. And it's now I'm mindful of it. If I do certain stretching and when I'm in the gym and I'm lengthening my spine and all that kind of stuff, it really goes away. But I've been base jumping the last few weeks and everything's kind of compacted and I'm stressed again.
Yeah. If you get a chance, go on my YouTube channel and I show a whole procedure that if you do will probably really help take a lot of that stress out of there. Did I teach you how to do your abdominal wall and the whole front of your body with the foam roller before?
No.
I might have at the time, but it might be really good for you to start doing that again, because you can get the foam roller up under your diaphragmatic arch here, the arch of the rib cage. And by the breathing and the technique I show, you can get right inside of there.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
Yeah. And if you don't find it, let me know. Just come visit me sometime and I'll take you through it. Just for fun. I'd love it for the listeners to hear a bit of the story of how you became this, world famous and world champion stunt motorcycle man.
I was born in Australia. I had croup when I was born, so I actually died of croup. They had to restart my heart at 16 months old. So I'm like...
So you got the dying thing out of the way before.
Yeah.
So it's already done.
I've done it a few times since. I've actually done it 5 times. Where I've had my heart restarted. I got viral meningitis when I was 16. At the time, I grew up racing motocross all through school. So I was really elite motocross racer. I wanted to become I guess, the person I am today. But my path of going that route, I thought that I'd go from racing motocross straight into like professional racing and go that route. And it was a big strain on the family. So my dad said, you know, if that's what you want to do, you know, he advised me to buy real estate, which I listened to. So I bought my first house when I was 18.
Good.
And then that allowed me to kind of follow my path, because when I was 21, finished my trade as electrician, my house had doubled in value. So I borrowed off the equity, used that money to fund my career. And I took, I haven't been back to work since, but I plan to take, some time off work where I could use that money to pursue this career and see where I got to. And if it didn't work out, I had the ability to sell the house then and pay back the loan. And then at least I tried, you know, I could go back to being an electrician. So I had this like fail safe path of like seeing if I was worthy of this dream I had. And the thing that made me believe in it was a near death experience. I got viral meningitis and viral encephalitis when I was 16, working, overworked myself, took in some dirty water on a jet skiing accident. I was really run down at the time. I got viral meningitis, viral encephalitis. It attacks the brain. So I had kind of like a brain injury. Through the meningitis, what it did, it left me with secondary impact syndrome. So once I made a full recovery from that and learned motor skills, I couldn't speak either. I kind of had like a stroke-like symptoms, mm-hmm. where my eye turned down, all my left side went into like a stroke. I was kind of lost coordination, and it was like a 3-year rehabilitation after that. But after that, I didn't want to be an electrician anymore. I wanted to follow this dream that I had, because I'm like, life's short. You know, I need to ask myself, answer the question for myself, and there's no way of answering it other than trying it. So mm-hmm. I was luckily, through buying the house, I was able to kind of create this opportunity to try it. And I think the courage of, like, before that I got hurt, I didn't want to like take the risk of like this road that was guaranteed being an electrician could see me have a pretty comfortable life, and this other way was totally unknown, anything could go wrong and I could probably kill myself. But it was like my kind of, what people think, my normal state of mind was like, do the safe route. Mm-hmm. And then after this near-death experience, I was like, I need to try this other route. So I think through that near-death experience, it gave me the courage to like really give it 100% commitment. And then through that, you know, obviously I stopped working and went and started traveling the world. I was one of the first guys to do a backflip in my run. And so I got this Welcome to America. You know, I was welcomed here because I was kind of elite at the time. And once I came to America, we never went back. But during that path, now I had secondary impact syndrome. So a couple of times in my career, I've had some traumatic head injuries where I've gone into seizure, and then they've had to establish an airway. And when I go into seizure, then they kind of put you on life support. And out of those seizures, I've had my heart restarted a couple of times because I have a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And so the last time that happened was in 2014. I was knocked out for about 3 minutes. When I came to, I'd had traumatic brain injury, so one eye was closed. I was real grumpy, and then about 15 minutes later, I had a seizure, and once they got me into the paramedic truck, and I actually died. So they had to start my heart on the way to the hospital. I woke up about a week later, and I was super foggy, like I had the brain fog like you could never imagine. So since then, it's been a bit of a path to get sharp again, which I've done a whole bunch of different stuff, but ultimately I feel like I'm back, and I don't know if I was sharp at the start, but I feel pretty good, you know, and things are going well.
Yeah. You know, I didn't realize you had that going on. Next time you have stuff like that, give me a call, because there's things I could help you with. There's a bunch of stuff that I could give you to help with that. A couple of things. I didn't know you'd had viral meningitis. You and I have something in common. When I was in basic training in the military, you have to do everything with a buddy. And my buddy was this guy, I won't say his name because I'm talking about him, but he was very obese. Like, he shouldn't have been there. But, you know, guys like that get completely exhausted from basic training because they, you know, try to work you to death. And he got meningitis, but I was his partner, so I had to sleep in this tiny little tent with him on all these military maneuvers. And I was in super, super good shape. I set tons of records in the military for fitness competitions and stuff. But all of a sudden, I'm getting almost like heat exhaustion. Like I'm getting high, like I'm leaving my body, and I'm shaking. And I'm like, something's really wrong. I've never had anything like this before. And I couldn't even keep up with the pack. And normally I'm the guy that they use to go pick up all the stragglers and so on and so forth. And so one of the sergeants saw me, and he could tell something was wrong. And he goes, Paul, what's wrong with you? I said, I don't know. I said, I feel like I'm going to pass out any second. I said, something's wrong. I've never felt this in my whole life. So they took me to the hospital and they took my partner with me, and we both had viral meningitis.
Wow.
And so I was locked up in a isolation ward for 1 week. But what happened is at day five, my drill sergeant came to me and said, I hate to tell you this, but if you're in here, you got two more days to get out of here, and you're going to have to be recycled and go through basic training again. And I said, there is no way in hell you're going to get me to go through that again. I'm never going to do that again. I don't give a shit. I said, I am fucking getting out of here, pal. So I started talking to my soul and talking to God and saying, we cannot be here for two more days. So, you know, I just demanded God heal me.
Incredible.
And I started doing push-ups and sit-ups on my bed. And when the nurse would come around, she would say, you can't do that. You can't do that. You're sick. And I said, no, I'm not sick. I can't afford to be sick. I don't have the time to be sick. I said, I'm going to do push-ups and sit-ups and jumping jacks and calisthenics in this room nonstop till you let me out. And so finally on the seventh day, they released me. And somehow I got cleared. They tested my blood and I was right. The other guy, he had to go through basic training again, and he's probably in the hospital for another week.
Wow.
But I remember my brain feeling like my head was going to explode, like tons of pressure in my head.
Because viral meningitis causes your brain to swell.
Yeah. And even every breath hurt, and talk, if you moved your head, it hurt like hell.
I'm sure. Yeah. I can remember it. It was brutal.
So we have that in common. I didn't know that.
Hi, everybody. I know that you're all aware of the importance of vitamin C. There is a mountain of research on it, but not all C is created equally. I love Paleo Valley's Essential C Complex because it is the real deal, bioavailable. And I wanted you to hear right from Autumn Smith, founder of Paleo Valley, why their Essential C Complex is so unique and something you definitely want for your family and your children. Autumn, tell us about your Essential C Complex.
Well, I was shocked to learn as a holistic nutritionist that 90%, over 90% of the vitamin C on the market is derived from genetically modified corn, and then it's processed with highly volatile acids. And so I knew I had to find a better way to get all of the powerful benefits of vitamin C. So what I did was I dove into the research and I found the three most vitamin C rich superfoods on the planet. That's unripe acerola cherry and camu camu and amla berry. And then I just packed them into capsules. And the benefits are amazing, because you're not only getting vitamin C, but all of the other wonderful benefits that come from these amazing superfoods. So to get access to this complex, all you have to do is go to paleovalley.com, and you can use the code CHECK15 at checkout. That's lowercase CHEK15, and you can save 15% off.
Did you have any experiences during any of these NDEs where you're out?
Yeah. I mean, I remember essentially looking back on my life, you know, and I came to the point of realizing I had unfinished business. Mm-hmm. So I think that might have been a turning point when I got out of there, that I wanted to follow this journey I've been on, because I realized that I was in the wrong place, you know, and I think that was a sign for me to go on this other route, because if I had gone on that other route earlier, I wouldn't have been around all these people. That wouldn't have happened. So it was just a sign for me to that I was worthy of something else. That's what I took from it. Once I got out of hospital, I was motivated to follow this next route, and I definitely had an out of body experience, you know, because I remember just my vision was impaired. I couldn't see properly, but when I closed my eyes, I was on this journey. So I think for a long time I was kind of like in this, you know, in this kind of state where I was able to kind of look back on my life and all this kind of stuff. I was really, you know, obviously, you know, all these signs from a head trauma to head injury, but I was definitely in a different conscious state for a while. And whether it was the medication, the fact I'd nearly died, but I remember coming out of there just believing that there was a new path for me.
Yeah. And out of curiosity, was there any correlation between, say, a deep DMT experience and the near-death experience?
For sure. You know, when I had my DMT experience, I did the same kind of thing. I went back and reevaluated my life, but it was a bit of a different experience, because I was able to put a closure to a lot of the things that happened to me in my past that creates, you know, emotional trauma. You know, I think none of us have a no one has the perfect life, right? We all deal with all different kinds of stuff. So I think a lot of the things that I dealt with were limiting on me and kind of gave me a limiting kind of mindset.
Yeah.
And I, after that experience, I was able to kind of get rid of all that. But then essentially I felt like I was just this new person that was like with no skill set, because I was going down a different road of that I'd uncharted territory. But I really like kind of started this new journey of like following what my life was like, my goal.
Your heart, your soul.
So it was like my life's purpose was like built around this bike guy. But being the kid, you know, growing up, like any normal kid, making jumps on their bikes. And I was always like making these little jumps and bringing it out further and further and further until I was doing these giant jumps out the front of the house. Mm-hmm. And I've been addicted to like making jumps and pulling them back. And it's the fear you face as a little kid when you're going down for that jump and you've made it bigger and you're not sure on the speed and all that kind of stuff. But I was essentially doing all this fundamental training that's going to allow me to do what I've done. So I've used that, what I learned as a kid, transitioned into helping me, you know, I feel the same fears I had as a kid nowadays going for these jumps. And obviously I've dealt with it so many times and the jumps have got bigger and the risks have got more. But I remember still, even now when I go do something, it's still you're doing that circle where you're kind of in your head and I'm able to now not get in my head and believe in my work and put a lot of it to the side and just be mentally clear and focus on the key things that are really going to get you around straight. Because it's one thing to like want to do this and your ego, but then all of a sudden now you're not focused on your technique and you're guaranteed to get it wrong because you're not the right.
Bad news. It's too, you know, you're at a level now where if you're not centered and you know, aligned with yourself, body, mind, and spirit, it's, I don't think you need me to tell you.
Yeah.
Everybody who's ever seen you jump knows one mistake and it's bad news. It's, you know, hitting the ground from 100-something feet in the air or, some of these, you know, that Las Vegas thing was what, 10, how many stories up was that?
10 stories. My last stunt was 5,000 feet.
Yeah, 5,000 feet in the air. And oh, that was what I was going to ask you. You let a motorcycle burn in from 5,000 feet in the air?
Yeah, it was.
Did you look at it?
I did. When I jumped off, I looked back and I've been tracking. And so I'm tracking away and I rolled over and it disappeared because of all the textures. You know, you got the trees and all that in the background. It eventually disappeared on me. But yeah, we let it burn in. We had a shoot, like a little pilot shoot attached to it. So it kind of made it just go straight down and we did it over the top of a big private property. So it was all calculated. And I had Sean McCormack, which is like one of the most studliest guys in the skydiving industry. He was my mentor to get me through it safely. And just awesome to work with someone at that level of caliber. You know, he trains the SAS and all these, you know, government people and the guys that used to work for. He trains all those skydivers. So he kept me safe, but we let it burn in. But it was a Razor scooter, so it's a Razor little electric kids bike you can buy in Walmart.
Oh,
and so the good thing out of it is, like after that stunt, I'm going to have a Robbie Madison signature bike.
Cool.
So it's pretty cool. I got a global toy now.
That's a great thing.
Yeah, and so super super stoked on it. And people see got my new brand Mad Will. So Mad Will is obviously Mad's my last name, but that Mad Will is like that will to achieve your dreams, you know, to overcome all these things. And we all have mad will inside of us. It's just whether I need to get you a shirt, but you know, everyone that does something who's a great in their path, they're the people who inspire me. It doesn't matter what walk of life you're from.
Too.
If you're great at something, then I'm all yours. I'm blown out by everyone who's great at what they do. So
I've studied the lives of 150 great thinkers. I've got every one of them in here. I've studied the biographies of at least 150 of the greatest thinkers in the world. And every one of them went through hell. In fact, if you haven't seen, have you ever seen on Amazon, they have I think it's called the Genius series, and one of them's on Einstein's life and the other one's on Picasso's. Have you seen those?
I haven't.
They'll blow you away. They're beautiful. They're very well done. Start with Picasso. And when you see the shit these two guys had to put up with and all the political crap and what they tried to do to manipulate these guys at the beginning of the Second World War, you can just see they live through a sea of extreme tensions. Then Einstein being called into the Manhattan Project and not wanting his knowledge to be used to destroy people. And then when they dropped that bomb, and most people don't know this, but the Japanese had already surrendered when we dropped the bomb on them.
Wow.
We didn't have to do that. They had already surrendered, but the Americans wanted to send a message to the world not to mess with them. And that kind of stuff just broke Einstein's heart because that's not what he wanted to be involved in.
No.
But you're right. You know, when you start studying the minds of great thinkers and great people, they've all had to really work through the fire. There's no easy, there's no handouts out there.
Yeah. And one of the things, you know, like I said before, after all these stunts, I have to kind of recreate myself and reinvent myself, so to speak. And after I jumped the football field live on ESPN, it was one of the biggest viewed live stunts that I'd ever had. So they wanted to, like, let's do more. That was great. You know, we captivated this massive audience and we held their attention for this long. And that's what it's all about in the TV game, is how long you can keep people's attention. So they wanted a new stunt, and I was trying to come up with it, and the team at Red Bull had said, you know, what else do you want to do? And, you know, obviously I jumped the football field, which is just a bit of a creative thinking. The world record at the time was 330 feet, and 360 feet would be end zone to end zone. So that was my goal I set out for, and I came 4 feet short of it in the practice, but on the night I had a 12-mile-an-hour headwind.
Oh, nice.
So that kind of shortened me by 30 feet. So
It was a headwind.
So yeah. It worked against me. You know, I went further in practice than I did on the night, which is kind of – that's the whole reason I jumped it twice, because they said, what are you going to do next? And someone in the front row yelled out, do it again. And I go – I'm going to do it again. I said it on live TV, so they couldn't not let me do it again. So the boss at ESPN fired everyone on the set when I said I was going to do it again. They went to a commercial break. I didn't realize this. I rode back to my starting point, waited for another commercial. Ravi, who was like my guy that was setting me off at the time, he's like, listen to the earpiece. He's like, all right, go. So I went for the second time, did it successfully. When I landed, the guy hired back everyone and gave him a promotion after it. It became a better TV spectacle.
That's funny as hell, man.
What I wanted to touch on is that is I knew the story of Einstein, but he came up with the equation
E=mc².
Right. Apparently, he was like stuck trying to figure out, connect the dots, and so he went out rowing his rowboat, just to let it all kind of, and took his mind off it. And when he was rowing, you know, with a clear head, it all just came to him.
Yeah,
and so. I don't know if I got the whole context of the story correct, but that was like what I took from it. So I realized when they said to me, like, what else do you want to do? I was sitting days out with a pen and paper, and I was like trying to come up with this idea that I knew was in me, and I just couldn't think it, you know? So I said to myself, all right, universe, if I'm meant to do this, can you bless me with the idea? I'm done trying to think about it, but if I'm worthy of it, then bless it with me. And if I'm not worthy of it, then it wasn't meant to be. And that's just how I looked at it. So I went about my life. I kind of put it out there to the universe that I want to get this next stunt, and could it enter me if I'm worthy of it? And that was it. I'm like kind of went about my life, didn't set any days to think about it again. And I was driving down the freeway, and I turned onto the 405. And right when I turned onto there, I was like getting up to speed on the on ramp, and I passed a Holiday Inn. It was 12 stories high, and at the speed I was going, and I saw that ramp at that building, I realized with the right ramp at this speed, I could have jumped on top of that building. And so that just slapped me in the face. That idea just hit me like that. And then I called the guys at Red Bull and I said, hey, I've got the idea. I'm going to jump on top of a 10-story building. And they said, what else? And I said, and then I'm going to turn around and jump off. And well, at the time, I was just going to jump up. And then after I spoke to Spanky Spengler, who was one of the Evel Knievel stunt guys, and that's why I'm really tied to Evel Knievel, is just this whole beautiful way it worked out. I got involved with his guys, and Spanky Spengler told me, well, if you jump up there, you can jump down. And he explained how. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. So then it became to jump up and jump down. But it was cool just to get a sign from the universe like that when you give up on it. And it's like, I think it's a good message to people. If you feel like you're worthy of something, don't always put the pressure on yourself. You have to come up with it. Sometimes if you just feel worthy of it and put it out there.
Which brings me up, because I teach these kinds of things, as you know. So there's a technique I teach for getting support from the universe. And what happens is people get frustrated because 2 days later or 2 weeks later it hasn't come. And so the way I teach this,
they had a timeline on it.
Yes. And I say, look, there's a technique that you got to understand. It's called don't pester the mailman. And what I mean by that analogy is, if someone's waiting for a tax return, they'll go out and stand at the mailbox every day. And if it doesn't show up, they get pissed off at the mailman. And the mailman's like, I just deliver the fucking mail. I don't write the check.
Yeah.
You know, so the concept is, if you keep pestering the universe, then you don't realize the universe has to move all sorts of things around to get the right people at the right place at the right time. Like when I was, you know, after my divorce from my first wife, I knew that the Institute has already gotten so big I couldn't handle it. Like the amount of people after me and the amount of stress and
writing articles all the time and dealing with complex issues with elite athletes and relationship problems and body problems and all the stuff, drug problems, steroid problems. And I was just like, I was just spread thin. And so I just said, you know, and I'd been through like 10 girlfriends because they, long story short, I won't bore everybody with it, but you know, it went, once they realized how focused I was and that I wasn't always just going to be coming to dinner on time, and then they would always start getting pissed off. And so I'd call it the 90-day layoff. They usually last 90 days. And so I finally said to the universe, look, if you really want me to do this institute, then I need a woman that understands me and can contribute to me and support me in this. So I used Yogananda's soulmate's prayer, which is very simple. Bless me that I choose my life companion according to the laws of perfect soul union. And I wrote down everything I needed in my partner, everything from her looks to her education to her background to the way she moves. I wanted a woman that was trained in dance, that liked music. I couldn't be monogamous. I learned that in my first relationship. So I had like a page and a half of all the things I wanted in this woman. And then I wrote what I would bring to her in reciprocity. And I sat and I did the soulmate's prayer, and I meditated usually for an hour every day. And on almost exactly a year and a half, I was sitting on the beach in Gold Coast, Australia, between two workshops, and I had a vision of a woman come to me crystal clear. And I went, that was the first time in a year and a half. And the interesting thing was, a few days, 2 days before that, I was at this little roadside place to have breakfast at a surf hangout. And there was a psychic there. And I normally don't go to psychics because I don't need psychics. I'm psychic enough. But everything inside me told me, go sit with that woman. And so I sat with the woman. And I won't tell you all the things she said, but it was wild. Just because I want to hear your story. But I want to share this with you and everybody because it's part of this manifestation concept. And out of the blue, she says, you're about to meet the woman that will open your wings and be with you for the rest of your life. And I said, really? And I didn't even, she didn't know anything about me. She didn't know I'd been meditating on this for a year and a half. And then a few days later, I think it was either, yeah, it was like a few days later, I had this vision. The next workshop I went to at the Australian Institute of Sport in Canberra, I was teaching there. And I just felt a presence come in the room as I was setting up the slide projector screens. And I turned around, and exactly the woman I saw in my vision had just walked through the door. And every acupuncture meridian in my body lit up. Like I was like a lightning bolt was going through me, and I was vibrating. I'm like, I wonder if that girl knows we're going to get married. And I said to myself, I hope she doesn't ask me any questions because I won't even be able to talk to her. I was like stunned. It was so powerful.
Incredible.
First person to raise their hand was her, and I could barely talk. And she said to me later, she goes, you know, I thought I'd flew all the way from New Zealand to see you, and I'd heard all this about you, and you could barely talk. She goes, I thought, oh my God, I made a mistake. I wasted all this money. The guy's an idiot.
That's
and
awesome.
So here we are 25 years later, you know, and she's just the greatest human being. It's amazing.
Penny.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And so the point I'm making is I had to meditate and put my heart and soul into receiving this woman and guaranteeing myself that I would reciprocate and be that for her. You know, a lot of people want this perfect partner, but they don't want to be perfect for their partner. So they want, you know, perfect boobs, lots of money, smart, but they don't do anything to make themselves worthy of that.
Right, right.
So I spent a year and a half. And it was funny because I used to study Napoleon Hill's teachings a lot. And the first day that I went to see Penny, I walked in, and right there in her library, like
Napoleon,
almost every book that I was studying, she had on her bookshelf and she was studying. Incredible. And we were both studying Napoleon Hill's master program at the same time. So the point I'm driving at is don't pester the mailman, right? And you know, when you, like you said, you had to wait a long time for the right circumstance, and all of a sudden you're driving down the freeway and there it is, right?
Yeah.
But it takes the universe. See, while that was going on, the universe is saying, okay, who's going to be the TV people? Who's going to be the support system? And so there's a lot of pieces that the universe has to move around.
And if you're not patient enough, then you actually abort your own plan because you get so jacked up, you can't see when the gift is right in front of you.
Right, right.
See, if you were too stressed out, you might have drove right past that.
Or not gone to the meeting or whatever.
And not even seen it.
That's a beautiful story that you did that. And it's crazy, like, you know, I have the perfect partner. My wife, Amy, is, I wouldn't be where I am without her for sure. She centered me and grounded me and helped me move away from the distractions in my life. And, you know, when we met, I met her dad first, and her brother was a phenomenal, he was a world champion wakeboarder. He's the first Australian rebel athlete, Josh Sanders. And I knew of him. He was like local to my area where I grew up. So he's like a local celebrity that I'd never really crossed paths with, but we had mutual friends. I'd heard about his sister, my wife. Mm-hmm. But I was on this event and I met her dad, and her dad and I had become like best friends. And I just thought he was like some roadie. Uh-huh. I didn't realize it was like the star's dad. And so we became really good friends. And then, you know, when I met the daughter, I was telling her about where I was at in life and how I wasn't looking for a partner because I'd kind of been through the ringer with multiple girlfriends and certain things were going the wrong way because I was kind of like this star motorbike rider that had this selection that I processed that I wasn't doing the right selections. I was probably looking for something different than what was probably the best one. But when we met each other, she wasn't like it wasn't my choice of a partner. It was like the universe chose it for me. So we set off as friends. And once I shared to her all my dirt, I thought there's no way this girl's going to want me because I've just told her like all these things that I've been up to and where I was at mentally and spiritually and physically. And she loved it because I was so open to her. But I've been open to her our whole lives. And it's been a great thing for us because she knows, like, she's so aware and she's so present that she reads my body language. So she didn't even have to ask me a question. She'll ask me the question of the thing that I'm trying to hide instantly, you know?
Yes.
So she's great. And so she keeps me in check there a lot. And even to this day, like, she just, couldn't do it without her. So it's we're meant to be. And I ultimately, now I think about it, I did ask the universe for her, you know, and it delivered, but I was probably unconscious to the process I was doing. But essentially I was moving, operating in these ways that I was able to kind of realize that she was the one. And I made a promise to her that I've kept since. And I said, you know, if you're going to be my girlfriend, I'm only going to be a girlfriend. My next girlfriend, I'm going to marry her, is what I told her. And so when I asked her to be my girlfriend, she's like, do you remember what that entails? And I said, oh, I remember. And she's like, well, I'm down if you're down. So that's it. And we've been together ever since. And we're still madly in love with each other. It's awesome.
Well, you know, Penny and I only knew each other for 4 days and we got engaged.
Yeah, that's awesome. When you know, you know.
So we got engaged and then she moved from New Zealand. She was in a relationship with a guy. She was living with a guy who thought she was going to marry him. But, you know, sometimes magic happens in strange ways. And so here we are 25 years down the line, still loving each other and loving life and having two kids. And her rule was, you can have as many wives as you want as long as they cook, clean, contribute to the bottom line, and don't talk too much. So she said, have all you want. So it took me many years to find Angie who could meet those criteria, but so now I'm happy with two.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. You know, people from around the world are constantly asking me where they can find organic foods and supplements that are actually organic, not just some fake impersonation, which is sadly so common in the marketplace today. My most common suggestion is go to Organifi.com, that's Organifi.com, where you can find a wide range of excellent nutritious products made from certified organic source materials. Organifi has superfood drinks that actually taste great, unlike most, immune support products, excellent high-quality protein powders, digestive support, joint support, liver support, green juice, hormonal support, and menstrual ease nutrition formulated by a team of female herbologists for women and more. My family and I and a significant number of my clients and friends and students from around the world use and love Organifi products because they're nutritious, taste great, and unlike many products, you actually get what you pay for. Hallelujah. I love Organifi's high values and high quality products, and they're excellent for athletes, children, and the whole family. There's no better investment than investing in your own health and well-being. And when it comes to investing in my health and the health of my family, I go to Organifi. If that's not enough to make you want to explore all the amazing products waiting for you at Organifi, I'd love to sweeten the deal for you by offering you a special Living 4D with Paul Check discount of 20% on any of Organifi's excellent certified organic, super clean, nutritious products by using the code capital C, capital H, capital E, capital K, 20 on checkout. That's check 20, all caps, on checkout. I hope you enjoy Organifi as much as my family and I do.
I'd like to know, who are some of the great people in your life and in sports, or any people that just, like, when you think back on your life, you say, that meeting that person was pivotal in my development?
I think ultimately the first person is my dad. You know, he was like very harsh in ways, but he made me who I am, and yeah, I love him. I love him so much because he just instilled like this work ethic of like, you know, just toughness. He made me tough, you know, and I'd train every day. I'd run 5Ks. I'd do 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups. I was a, you know, very strong and fit guy, and he introduced me to motorcycles and taught me a lot of great ways to how to conduct myself, you know, kind of, yeah, little kids have a lot to say, kind of like nip that one in the bud. And so it taught me to be a very humble person and also a hard worker and to not give up. And I know so many times in my career, I'm like just beating the hammer so hard, just working yourself to the point of exhaustion.
Yeah.
And it was all like conditioning to what I've had to go through, because it's like, you know, it's every day it's like that. So so my dad was huge to me. And then ultimately, you know, all these motorbike riders have been great. I look up to all of them. But yourself, man, like, you know, literally when I list this, I always think of you and always mention you. So it's you've shown me ways of how to navigate, which I would have been lost without that. You know, you teach me how to heal myself, how to be spiritually free, how to like shed all these emotions that can break a person. You know, and we all go through depression and stuff like that. And, you know, when I do get like that, we all get like that, being able to kind of come back and recalibrate myself through meditation and turn the mind off, because you are what you think. And if you let those toxic thoughts reign, and even, you know, we get down and you beat yourself up, you can't beat yourself up too much. It's good to kind of like beat yourself in the line and learn where you're going short, but then it's all right. Now I've learned that, shrug it off, think positive, smile at yourself, you know, be appreciative of what you have. And so being able to check in with myself all the time and stay calibrated and know I'm on the right path, you've given me that strength to be able to do that. So thank you for that.
Thank you, man. You know, the greatest gift for me, I always tell my students, if you want to do me a favor as your teacher, just practice what I've taught you. If it doesn't work, come let me know. Because so far, everybody that told me it didn't work wasn't doing it right.
Yeah.
But it's, I tell them, don't believe a word I say. Your job is not to believe me. Your job is to go test it. And so when I see a guy like you take what I taught you and go put it to the test, that's when I feel the boomerang of love comes back, right? Because if I give someone a technique and they don't use it, well, it's kind of like someone who has a jack and a tire wrench in their car, but they sit on the side of the road complaining because they got a flat tire.
Yeah.
And I just taught them how to change a tire a week ago.
Right.
You know, so, okay, well, you deserve yourself then. Sit there and get hungry. Now, there must be, you know, Evel Knievel obviously was a big influence and inspiration.
You asked me that. It's hard for me to like just sit here and name all, because I'm so inspired by so many people. You know, being in the Red Bull family, I'm around just amazing athletes, and, you know, the Red Bull Institute, they have, you know, doctors and all that kind of stuff. So being around that level of people, you know, all these athletes give me inspiration. And then I also see, you know, a lot of, like, one of my really good friends who just recently passed away, Chris Ackerman, he was involved in an injury where he severed his spinal cord up near the C2, so he couldn't breathe for himself, and he was like totally quadriplegic. He lived in a bed for 13 years. He endured, maybe more, maybe 15 years. He went without being able to move, without being able to breathe for himself. And I used to tell him, you know, I'm like, you're my hero, man. Like, because mentally, like, we're all
that's just being locked in
torture,
hell,
right?
Man.
And so he was able to stay upbeat and funny and all that kind of stuff, even though with what he's done. And when I'd come in the room, he'd almost like say that he didn't realize, he forgot he was, you know, impaired, because we'd be so connected to our minds and stuff. So people like that, you know, and I tell him, like, don't think you're unworthy, man, because you inspire me every day. So I get inspiration from everyone that deals with hardships, because, you know, at the end of a hardship, you overcome it and there's great things that are inside. So I always remind myself when things get tough, like, know that you're just, you're closer to having another
breakthrough.
Breakthrough, right?
Yeah.
So he was like, but yeah, Evel Knievel, hugely inspiring to me. I remember sitting when I was about 11 years old, it was my mum's birthday, and it was when Robbie Knievel jumped the fountains, and I remember sitting there watching it, and when he jumped the fountains, all the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I remember a cold shiver going through my body I'd never felt before, and I guess it was the universe let me know that that inspired me. So yeah. those memories are really fun to me, but yeah, all the people who are great at what they do inspire me. So
yeah.
I take inspiration from everyone because I think it makes you well-rounded. If you just look at one person, then I think, you know, we all have to be ourselves too. So trying to remember that and mindful of that. I want to be a great writer, but I also want to be a great dad. I also want to be aware of, you know, be a great human, give back, you know, be mindful of people and pollution, our carbon footprint, and what we eat, all these things. I want to be great at them all.
Yeah, life is full, isn't it?
It is very full.
When people tell me they're bored, I'm going, you got to be kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
You're bored?
Yeah.
Shit.
I deal with that with my kids.
It's like, think about what it took to create you. 100 trillion cells working in harmony, each made of 100 trillion atoms with 30 billion, billion biochemical reactions a second. If you're bored, go look in the mirror and say, how in the fuck did this happen? And right. How does it keep happening? And how is it that when I get sick, I heal? You know, how is it that my teeth know where to grow? How is it that you start off with one cell that divides to 100 trillion cells that range from teeth to eyes to brain tissue? I mean, if you're bored,
you're not mindful. You don't realize what's going on around you. You're not paying attention to the here and the now. Because, like, when, you know, after DMT, it taught me that a lot. Like, after my DMT experience, I was aware of every single muscle and cell working in my body.
Yes.
And I never looked at anything the same again. You know, I remember looking at an airplane flying in the sky the next day, and I was like, wow, it was such a mind explosion of what had to happen to create that. And the fact that they were serving Coca-Cola on board in these little cans with bubbles, and it's like, just everything, you know, you look at a car and it's easy to just be like, oh, it's a car, and not even think about it. Kids look out the window and they go, oh, there's a truck, and they go back to their iPads. But look at the molds that had to happen, the engineering that had to happen. Yes. You know, so after doing DMT, I mean, especially at nature, it's just such an overwhelming, amazing thing to look at, that it's like you can't get bored of it if you're able to see it from that right perspective. Mm-hmm. But I think if people are bored, they're just not seeing the world in the right perspective.
I also think that one of the reasons that people today get so bored is because they haven't really had to deal with legitimate hardship. So they get passive and they just get to the point where they just expect that food's always going to be in the refrigerator. And, you know, it's kind of like they get lost in the mundanity of life, but they don't really look at the miracle of what it took for all that to happen. It's like I've had lots of athletes over the years. I say to them, they'll say something like, well, I do this by myself and nobody really helps me. And so they have this sort of like poor me thing, like I don't have enough support. I'm going, oh, so you really think you're doing this all yourself? Who made the bicycle that you race? Somebody else. Who manufactured the tires? Who made the toilet paper you wipe your ass with? Who made the food you ate this morning in the hotel? Who made the car that got you here? I mean, look around. Every single thing that we're doing is made possible because somebody else was living their dream.
Right.
Right. And so if you realize the magnificence of how many people overcome the obstacles and the naysayers, and, you know, like when I was a kid, people told me you'll never amount to anything. I only have a 9th grade education, you know, and I knew inside myself, I said, you watch. I'll be making more money than you do one day. And I just knew I had to keep going. But a lot of people just get stuck in this sort of spoon-to-mouth
environment cycle. That's been created to keep everybody passive and numb and controllable. And I say, you gotta have a rebel inside. You gotta have a little bit of a rebellious spirit and go out and do something for yourself. You know, you gotta carve your own path into the woods. You can't just do what everybody else is doing, or you'll just be like everybody else.
My kids, you know, and I love them, and I've got a lot of teaching to do, right, to grow these beautiful young boys. But it's when they say that bored thing, I'm like, all right, let's not be bored, you know, and just doing some little things. Like, we always go to an activity, but it's like activities are so gratifying because you can always be better no matter what mm-hmm. level you're at. So it's just great to like take them to the pump track, you know. I'm learning, they're learning, we're all learning together, we're having fun, and all of a sudden, you know, time you're not watching the clock anymore, and you have hours go by, and you've had all this great exercise mm-hmm. and fun, and you know, love and care and all these things happen, and you're like, it's not boring.
What are some of the biggest challenges you've had to work through? We've talked about some of them. You've had 5 times you've died. You've had meningitis. You've had multiple head traumas. You've had, you know, I know you've had injuries I've had to help you with because you were fucked.
Good way of putting it.
What would you say are the challenges in your life that you're the proudest of yourself for working through?
I think getting up and making that conscious decision to want to ride my motorcycle, you know, I had to figure out how I was going to figure it out, right? So luckily, like I spoke before, I bought the house. I used my equity to fund my career. But from that point on, meeting my wife, Amy, who said, like, if you want to make something of yourself, you need to go to America. So we packed our bags when we were young and we moved to America, and we didn't know what was ahead of us, but I knew I could ride a bike really good. I loved doing it, and I was open for the adventure. So we just left with bags, not knowing when we're coming back, and we never went back. And it's probably one of the greatest things, like the most growth I've ever had, you know, is like when I left Australia and to come here to a new country and get, you know, become, we're almost going to be citizens now, but I've been, you know, recognized as a green card now for so many years, and just the journey we set out to come into America, and now we call it home, and all our friends live here, and we love it, and it's just been such a challenge. But all the relationships, you know, I think looking back at my life is my greatest thing. You know, it's like just all these amazing people who are in our lives, you know, the support I've had of Red Bull and now KTM, and you know, we're starting our own brand, which I'm really stoked with. It's just something that I can leave and build with my kids, and it's for my kids. It's like,
what's your brand going to be for?
So it's Mad Will. So it's just right now, it's just going to be clothing.
Okay.
Just so we can represent our own brand, but essentially we're going to give back. You know, we're going to create opportunities for kids who don't have fathers and who have broken lives to come and feel our family love, you know, and then to take that around and share that through the stunts we do and also be part of our joint movement to be your best, you know. So that's the message we want to spread. It's like, you know, you can be your best and you can be worthy of it, and you need to overcome all the obstacles and show people that it's not easy for anyone. Like, I didn't have an easy road, but there's a power, you know, and I think that power in life is like, if you're doing what you love, then you know, you're doing great. So
yeah, love is the magnetic force that holds the whole universe together. And I think that's why I tell everybody, the first thing that I do and teach Czech professionals to do is, before you start trying to figure out what's wrong with somebody, working with them as a coach or a therapist, you have to identify what their dream is. Because if they don't have a dream bigger than their crisis, all you're doing is medicating their pain, and they'll just go off and create another crisis. So, you know, your dream is where your love is at. It's when your heart compass is aligned with your North Star, and then you can make it through the challenges. But if you're living somebody else's dream or doing what you got to do, you think you got to do to make money, then you usually end up depressed or anxious or sick, because you know on the inside you're not moving in the direction of growing yourself and becoming who you were meant to be in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. As a kid, my sister bought me a poster that it was above my bed growing up for 10 years. And the poster said, face your fears, live your dreams. You know, it's become my mantra. You know, it's like, behind every dream is fears, you know, and there's all these things, but if you work through it, you face your fears, you can't hide from them. So if you're hiding from them, then I think you're setting yourself up for toxicity at some point. So facing them is definitely a point of growth.
Well, that leads right into one of my questions. What is your greatest fear, and how do you deal with it constructively? So if there was one fear that you say is the one that comes back the most, that you have to say, hello, you, what would it be?
It's not being successful.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And my biggest fear is like, I wanted to be great at what I was wanted to do, and I didn't want to fall short of it. And I always felt that like, I needed to be the guy with all the most gold medals. And funny enough, I don't have one.
But you have a lot of world titles and and things that no one else has ever done.
Yeah. But it's cool to see, like, it's not really the gold medals isn't really the thing. It's the journey, right?
Yeah.
So I've had the ultimate journey, and you know, the gold medals don't mean anything to me now, but for a long time they did. And it's cool to see that I don't have them, because it's, because life's been so great to us, and my gold medals aren't the ones that, you know, the fake ones that they make for these athletes.
They're inside.
They're inside. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's achieving these little things, all these little steps that I do, become great ones. And so they're the fruit. And a lot of the time, you know, at the end of it, it takes a while for you to actually take it all in, because it's not just about the feat. It's about the culmination of all the people's work and the idea and making it happen, and still on that path, still doing some stuff that I don't know how it's going to end up and where it's going to go to, but I know it's possible, and that's what I want to make happen.
I have complete faith in you.
Thank you, Paul.
Even though you scare the shit out of me sometimes, I have to grow with you. I don't think it's a question of fear for you anymore. I think it's just a question of working with the universe to let it unfold the way it was meant to be.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Because a lot of people say, oh, you've done so much, you know, when's enough enough? You're risking, you know, your life and your livelihood and of your kids, and I'm mindful of that. But I tried to retire a couple of years ago, and I went into the worst depression I ever had, because I just wasn't setting myself goals anymore. Life became pretty mundane. And it's easier to stay happy when you've got all these goals to keep you motivated, but also then takes away the time to focus on other things. So keeping that balance has been really developmental for me. But having these things that are these bars I set, all these visions, these goals I want to achieve, really keeps me on path. And I don't want to get greedy with it, but that's why I keep coming back to, well, I said this when I was young, that this is the goal I wanted to do what Evel Knievel couldn't do. And so that's what I want to do. And after that, it's not like, yeah, I retired and then I don't want to go back to that, you know, depressed guy anymore. But at that point, I feel like I've done my work there. Mm-hmm. And then I can focus on getting better at the things that you teach, you know. It's like I really want to be able to kind of
pass on to
my kids. Is my biggest goal now is being the best father I can be and bringing them up and giving them as much attention, because another thing is like when you get busy, it takes time away from your kids. So even this weekend, you know, we were out with the kids and I went mountain bike riding with my buddies, and we came back and they're like, oh, let's go paddle over here. And I was like, I just been with the boys for the last few hours. I don't want to hang out with my kids. So it's always in me. It's like subconsciously resonating that I need to balance the time, and that's where I get my biggest enjoyment, really. It's really cool.
It does take discipline to balance yourself. I know, you know, I'm a very focused human being, as you know, and that's the mistake I made with my first son. You know, my first son was born when I just turned 18, so I didn't have any fathering experience, and I didn't have any father role models. My father was not a role model. My real father drowned when I was 8, and he left my mom when I was 3, so I didn't have much exposure. Then my stepfather was just a complete nightmare. So when I look back on it, I could see that, you know, my youthful discipline to make something out of myself got in the way of me being a dad. So then when these two came along, I realized, okay, now's my chance to, you know, do a better job of being a dad. But because I still have so much passion for my work, you know, I get up, as you know, I get up at 3:30 in the morning, and I come in here and it feels like 5 minutes, and it's 7 o'clock at night. And so I can go into a sort of a trance of, you know, working with spirit and trying to connect to the consciousness of the world and see what is it that the human beings and nature needs from me while I'm alive that I can contribute. And next thing you know, the whole day's gone, and then you go in and your kids are ready to go to bed, and I realize, geez, I've got to find a way to balance that in me. And so that for me has been, it's been a challenge, but it's also been very rewarding, because I realize how beautiful my children are. And you know, you only get one chance to be their daddy. And next thing you know, they're grown up and out of the house. And you know, the song that keeps haunting me when it comes to that stuff is Cat Stevens, the Cat's in the Cradle.
Dude,
and the
I can't believe you're saying that. That's Little the song that gets me.
And the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. But we'll get together then.
Yeah.
That song just
Dude, I can't believe you haunts said that. Me. It haunts me too. Same yeah. song.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it's crazy, you know. I love my dad so much and my mom, and it's just crazy as you grow up, you know, you go different ways, and I'll always love them so much. But now I'm kind of like my own, you know, obviously I am. And some people stay closer when they get older, but I've gone my own path, and, you know, there's still all that love still there, and they did a great job in me, and it's cool to like now take my experience and then what I want to give to my kids and how to change it, you know, but and just contribute just a bit more, like a bit more of like my contribution to it. But, you know, the way I grew up, you know, my dad motivated me to be, you know, to be mentally strong and physically strong, and it was the greatest thing for me. So trying to do that, keep that balance with my kids, you know, I feel like I lack sometimes too, because I'm always gone and always busy, but my dad would be there in the morning training with me, riding next to me, and you did a great job, took me surfing and real look, took me riding motorbikes all over the country, which gave me this foundation to ride my bike. So There's so much that happens when you're a kid that sets you up for later. And I try to be mindful of that now with my kids, because I'm like, you know, I don't want to give them an easy life where they don't have to do nothing, because that wouldn't be.
No.
You have to be tough on your kids.
Yeah. You know? You got to grow them.
Yeah. And there's a balance there. And so it's, yeah, that's my, you know, after I do this, I just want to keep living life with the kids and have a great time and teach them, you know, be along the ride with them. They can teach me.
I got a funny feeling when my kid meets your kid, when my kid meets your kids, he's going to be pulling on me all the time. I want to go see Robbie. I want to go see his boys. I want to ride their motorcycles. And so pretty soon I'm going to have my full on supercross system over here because I can feel Mana's got it in his genes, man.
I can help you design that one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll do that.
Did you know that Symbiotica means harmony? And you're really likely to enjoy my podcast with Shervin Jaferiah, the founder of Symbiotica. Symbiotica is an amazing company that makes excellent products to aid healing, enhance longevity, and improve performance at all levels of your being, from your spiritual practices to your athletic endeavors. I highly recommend you go to Symbiotica.com and check out their top-notch organically sourced products that include excellent tasting supplements like their Synergy Vitamin B12, which elevates energy naturally, to their Shilla J minerals, which help you better regulate your hormonal system. Their BioCharge activated coconut charcoal is an excellent detox support and removes toxins and poisons from the body quickly and non-invasively. Their organic longevity formula is one of my friends and students' favorites. They rave about it. I really enjoy their Regenesis liposomal glutathione for its amazing antioxidant powers, which is really helpful for anyone that enjoys vaporizing tobacco and herbs like I do. They also have great immune support products, water filtration options for drinking and showering, and some cool clothing and more. When you go to Symbiotica.com and use your Living4D discount code, which is capital C, capital H, capital E, capital K, 15 on checkout, you get 15% off anything they sell and you won't be disappointed. Enjoy Symbiotica.
I'd love to hear how you would describe your form of spirituality to somebody. If someone walked up to you and said, you know, what is your religion or what is your spirituality? How do you engage that aspect of yourself? How would you describe that? Like what is Robbie's inner relationship with whatever it is?
So I grew up as a Christian and went to Sunday school and all that kind of stuff. But I never was able to fully believe in it because I was always left with questions, and the minister couldn't always give me the answers that I was asking. And I wanted to know what is God and all that kind of stuff. And essentially, you know, I kind of answered it to myself, but I pray to God, you know, I believe in a God. I know God is in me. And so I believe in God, is what I believe in. And I believe in love, and I think the love is God. And I've asked you these questions before, and you've helped enlighten me. And, you know, after reading The Book of Understanding by Eckhart Tolle, mm-hmm. A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, yeah. A Book of Understanding by Osho. Those two books really change my mindset because I think Eckhart Tolle gets into it and explains that a guy that's stuck in a hole, he can't get help because of all these religions. They're based on their religions. They couldn't help this guy. And I forget the way he phrased it, but it's pretty beautiful. But I always think, like, if you're born somewhere on Earth, you know, if you're born in Thailand or something, you're a Buddha. If you're, so depending on where you're born,
right,
follow these different religions. So it kind of got me. I don't really. I'm a believer in all religions. You know, I think there's parts of them that are great, but essentially, I follow the Ten Commandments. You know, I try to as my best. I just emit love, but I'm not stuck on the practices of a religion, just because. I just love people, and I think if there's love there, then you're doing the right thing. And you know, there's respect, there's love, and you know, I might be wrong, but I'm quite simple in the mind. You know, I just live my life based off of trying to be my best and praying that I'm doing the right thing, that I'm giving back, that I'm caring for people, and essentially. I ask God to come into my life, and just when I pray, I ask God to make me a better person. You know, we're all sinners, so I ask for forgiveness, and I ask that He can come into my body and into my life and help me make the right decisions to be the best person I can be, and to follow my heart and to live happily. And so I just try to just stay focused on being loving and kind and happy. But essentially, I'm not going to Sunday school every day. You know, my church is meditating and turning my mind off and activities and I don't have the best answer for that question.
Well, that is a good answer. I don't think you need to have a better answer. I think that's fantastic. But you reminded me of a quote from Osho, since you used the sin word. Osho says, "There's no such thing as a sin except doing something twice when you were sure it didn't work the first time."
Yeah. And, you know, it's beautiful. And I'm such a giver, you know. Like, if I see someone who's begging, I'd give them some bucks, you know. If I can help someone out, you know, I often see a homeless person and I'll walk into a restaurant and see a homeless person outside. And then when I leave, I get a to-go meal and I'll drop it to them on the way out.
You know?
So just, just caring about people and loving people and giving back, and I think is a great way. And to me, it doesn't matter what race you are, or religion you are, whatever. I love them all, and I've been all around the world and seen all religions, and everyone's happy and loving. You know, there's always bad people in every community, but essentially, I don't. You know, I appreciate certain people's religious practices, But yeah, man, I pray to God, and I think we're all praying to the same God, so I don't think the religions matter too much, in my opinion.
This is why I really, one of the beautiful things of Sufism is this: the first principle of, you know who Sufis are? Sufis are the mystical branch of Islam. So you have Christianity, and then you have the mystic Christians, like Saint Bernard, for example, or Eckhart. There's many great Christian mystics. Hildegard of Bingen, there's many of them. But they were always the ones that were breaking all the rules and the church is trying to kill them. And so the Sufis are the mystics of Islam. Rumi was a Sufi.
Okay.
You know, the poet Rumi.
Yep.
Yeah. So Rumi was a Sufi. He started his own Sufi order. But the first principle of Sufism, which is just stunningly beautiful, says, "There is no God but God. I worship everything and everyone." And that, I think, covers it all.
Well, that's me.
Yeah. And when people say, "Well, what religion do you practice?" They say, "Well, part of me is a Sufi. Part of me is a Taoist. Part of me is a Christian. Part of me is an atheist." You know, when it comes to a bunch of corporate gods that'll burn you in hell and, you know, all this shit, then I become an atheist. But not a real atheist, but meaning
I don't worship those gods. I don't worship gods that segregate people and have chosen people and that will burn you in hell and all that shit. So, you know, I think when you realize that the word God means source, that for which there is no other, there can only be one source, and all that is comes from that source. And one of the ways I explain it to people, I say, look, if God was cookie dough, then everything in the universe would be some form of cookie dough, wouldn't it? And everybody says yes. I say, well, you got to realize that the Muslims think they're worshiping God, that they'll go to war with the Christians over and vice versa, but they forget it's all cookie dough.
Right.
So why not just go to the source and be done with all the battles and say, we're all brothers and sisters. We all come from the same source. And then,
amen.
And that's what spirituality is, really, is real getting past the dogma and the division and the separation and finding the commonality. We all need love. We all need food. We all need water. We all need space to live. And we all need each other. We're far better off if we celebrate each other and protect life than we, you know, get into all these pissing battles over who's got the bigger God, you know. And unfortunately, that's what most world wars are started over, is, or wars period, is arguments over what God wants, which is paradoxically. You touched on this. The question is, how do you handle or manage being a husband and a father with your works, your schedule, the risks for what you do? And how does your family handle it, knowing that you're literally riding the edge of life and death every time you perform? Is there any tips you could give busy people in the world that are maybe having a hard time managing the integration of what they think of as their life work relative to their family? What are some of the things that you use to bring you back into harmony there?
Yeah, I'm always pulled away from the family just to do my work. So, you know, when I'm away, I just have faith in that I'm consciously aware of them, because when you're consciously connected, I think then you're connected. You know, if I go away and I don't think about my family, if I come back, then I feel so separated from them, you know, because I haven't been connected with them. But staying connected with them mentally, spiritually, praying to them and being mindful of them, I think keeps me with them. And but yeah, I think just setting your intention, you know, and believing in it and doing the right thing. You know, I often pull myself up. You know, there's always these options of doing different things, and I choose the right options, because like you say, life is choices, right? So
yeah.
I've made the bad choices and I feel them separate me from life, and I've made the right decisions and I feel them bring me closer. So I just make those right choices, and based off of being mindful and loving to the family, and it steers me straight. But you know, like we said before, I'm always trying to find that balance. But you can't beat yourself up too much. But you always got to say no sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's a, you know, I've turned down things just because I've been, if I said yes, it would mean me being away from the family too long, and I'm not comfortable with that. So having the family has definitely changed what I say yes and no to. And I think if you didn't make those changes and make the yes and no's based off of that, then it would separate you. But you know, if you're like, oh yeah, I'm going away for this and it's going to be detrimental to my family, well, then I wouldn't go away. But if someone chose to still go away, then ultimately they're probably, you know, subconsciously making the decision to divide away from them. So there's always decisions. The decisions I make are based off of my family's lives too, what's best for them and what's best for all of us.
You know, when you're doing such intense, dangerous work, I can see how it could really be all-encompassing. You know, you're thinking about all the details. And like you said, you got to think of all the things that could go wrong, because if you overlook that, it could be the end of you. And also, you've got sponsors. You've got, you know, you got to perform at a high enough level that you know, you feel like everybody's getting a fair return on their investment. So it's a lot of pressure, you know. And I know what it's like, because I work with guys like you all the time, so I know how pressured it can get them. So the question is, what are some of the ways that you shake it off and detach from all that, so you don't lose yourself in all that pressure? Is there things that you do? Like for me, painting is a way I let go of the world, or meditating or hiking. I'm wondering, what is it that you do to depressurize and to kind of find solace in yourself without all the outer world stuff and obligations and stresses?
yeah, when it gets too much for me, that's the time when I haven't been taking enough time to sit still with myself. So when I get overwhelmed, I'm like, all right, you need to recalibrate, because I can see that I'm haven't got enough time. I can't answer enough phone calls. I can't get back to enough emails, and I haven't got the time, you know, when you're with the family, you're kind of like somewhere else in your head and you can't connect, and, you know, the kids playing with their toys, all of a sudden it just looks like a mess to you, and you're like, clean this stuff up. Rather, you could just jump in there with them and
right.
make a bit more mess and have this great bonding time. So what I do is when it gets too much is I go and sit in silence, you know, and it's a hard thing to do at that point because you kind of want to think more.
Yeah.
But being able to realize you don't need to think because you're already doing it all perfectly anyway. And so realizing that you're always in the best perfect time for the perfect reasons for everything's perfect. So it gives me a relaxing feeling to know that, just remind myself that everything's okay, you know. I think we forget to, like, you don't, even when you're stressed, it's hard to think that everything's okay. But if you take the mindset, no, everything's okay and it's all happening at the right place, the right time, just have faith in that, let go of all the stresses you can't control of. That's what I do. I just let go of the stress and I don't think about too much at all, because if I start breaking it down, I'd get overwhelming. I'd be stopped in my tracks. So I just kind of, even going away this last week, I had to learn how to base jump, and I know it's a huge danger. But I was reminding my wife, I'm not here because I'm trying to find a kick that I don't have, because I'm totally happy just being at home with the kids and with my wife. But this is going to allow me to do the training I need to do to achieve another dream that I've fulfilled, which is going to be a paycheck. It's going to help us move on with our lives. It's going to create more awareness and do everything that I'm doing to help our brand and what our goal is. So part of me reminds myself that I'm on the right path. You know, being mindful of the dangers, which is, I know I'm mindful of it because I'm totally terrified when you step up there. But if you're not terrified, that's when you need to ask yourself,
what's wrong?
Are you really in the right presence of mind? You know, so even when I do these jumps, I'm still mindful of all the dangers. And if I allow my mind, I can look at it from a very negative way and try and play the safe side. But I have that deeper spirit telling me that this is what I set out for. This is what I wanted. This is what I dreamed of. This, all my work has culminated to this moment. And now if I don't go through, I'm not only am I letting everyone down there who's come to be at this event, I'm letting myself down, because and I wouldn't want to live with that. So that gives me the courage to kind of, you know, just put the fear aside, stop thinking about it. And essentially I'm just present in my mind, and I can feel, you know, you're alive because you can feel your breath going in, your breath going out. But it's the breath work and that awareness really brings me back. And I think that's the main thing, is when the mind's busy, the first thing I do is not try and quiet my mind. I just try and get my breathing regulated, do the deep breathing, do it cyclically. I do some Hong Sol. Probably shouldn't talk about that, but that brings me to the spirit, and it just quietens me, myself down, and it brings my, I feel my frequency just drop right down, and I can almost go into a sleep like kind of meditation, just from, so once I calm myself with that, then I go through all the stuff and I picture what I want to do, and I can, once I mentally picture the technique it takes, I know I can do it. And then I oversee all the safety side of it, make sure whatever I'm doing, that the chain's tight, the fuel's full, the tires and pressures are good, the parachute's packed, all those kinds of things. And then I break it down to the steps of what could go wrong and what I need to do. And once you can see it all and you leave yourself no questions, you know that you're subconsciously doing it. When you're picturing yourself doing something, you're subconsciously going through it. So all your muscle memory is actually firing in sync at the right time. So you're able to practice all these things through mentally picturing it, and it's something that a lot of top athletes do, is picture themselves performing it. And if you're able to be in that mindset and see yourself doing it before you go for it, and have the mind clear, and you're not thinking about at the Olympics, the world's watching, or what did I eat last night, or whatever, and you do all that stuff and your mind's clear, then you're able to perform because those pressures aren't with you anymore.
Yeah, you've done the prep and you're centered in yourself.
Yeah, if you're going for a job interview and you've done your study, you know what you're talking about, you carry yourself well, you slept well, you feel great, then there's no reason you can't go in there and knock it out of the ballpark.
Absolutely. Are you allowed to talk about it? What's your next big event? What are you shooting for next? What can we expect out of you?
The people follow me on social media. See, I've been talking about a new stunt coming up, and it's not the biggest holy grail thing that I'm doing. I actually have two big things that are huge for me in my career of what I want to achieve that I've yet to done. But recently, and what's about to release, is I realized with this new ability to skydive, I I think the child in me dreamed up of how cool would it be if I have a helicopter lift up a platform that I could jump off. And, you know, many people have thought of this probably before, so I'm not owning the idea, but, you know, I came up with the design, the unique design through help of a buddy, and we lifted a ramp up to 5,000 feet and I rode down the ramp and did 4 backflips off it and skydived out of it. And that's to release my new toy line with Razor toys. And
so that was on a motorcycle.
That was on a little electric kid's bike.
Yeah.
Super cool. But the next ones, you know, I always wanted to fly as a kid, and, you know, you named my spirit animal Robbie Sky, which is perfect, because the skies are where I remember having vivid dreams as a kid of flying, and I always wanted to fly. And the day before my 40th birthday, I actually flew in a wingsuit for the first time.
Wow.
So that was pretty amazing, because that's what I thought of. That's why I remembered, you know, vividly remembered flying like that. So doing that, but, you know, obviously with my background in motorcycle, I want to fly my motorcycle. So that's my goal, is to fly the bike. And you know, fortunately enough, through my journey, I've met people that can help me make that happen. So working with some of the best scientists and engineers that, I mean, these guys are working for the US military. So we have some great people on the team, and, yeah, I'm working on trying to make that happen. And hopefully soon here, I'll do something pretty amazing that will be what I dreamed of as a kid. And after that, there's all these other things to go and do and
see what's next.
See what's next, yeah.
Turn one page at a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you knew you were going to leave this planet tomorrow, what message would you want to give everyone, knowing you're going to be gone after that, and you want to just leave them a message?
Face your fears and live your dreams.
There you go. I love it.
And give love all the time.
Yeah, that's great. That's really what life's about, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Just doesn't get any better than that.
Being the best version of yourself you can be.
Yeah. I think a lot of what really stresses athletes out is trying to compete with other people.
Yeah.
And I say, don't worry about the other guy. Worry about you. Try to improve your lap time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you work on getting the most out of yourself, you will find out what you're capable of. And if someone beats you, don't get upset at it. Just say, I just met my teacher. Now I got to study how they did that. Mm-hmm. Because whatever they're doing is working.
Yeah.
So instead of being all grumpy, you know, like a lot of fighters turn the guy that beats them into their enemy, and they, you know, paint their face on heavy bags and turn it into a negative thing. I say, why don't you study this guy and bow down and say, look, this guy came to teach me that there's a horizon in front of me and I got to reach it. And he's showing me how to get there.
And once you know you're worthy of beating him, your soul will tell you that you're ready.
Yes.
If you ask it. And if you're not sure, it'll probably tell you you're going to get your ass kicked too.
And you should listen.
Yeah. No, it's so true. And such a powerful thing. But yeah, I used to compete against all the other guys until I kind of got to that point of realizing that maybe the result wasn't based off of who was the worthy winner, because the ultimate decision is the judges. So that's why I wanted to kind of challenge, compete against myself, you know, and that's why Evel Knievel is such a, you know, such a big thing in my life, because I wanted to follow what he did. And it wasn't about jumping as many buses and trucks. It was just like, I wanted to take and I said this at his funeral, I want to take the torch where he left it and take it to a greater height. And I want to do it with his support. And I feel his spirit and my spirit. And I know what the end line there for me is and what I want to achieve. And once I achieve that, then yeah, it's just like, it's turning a page. And then have to find a new page of exploration. But I know there's a lot of things I could spend my time doing and be happy with. But ultimately, yeah, it's my goal is to be financially free, was, you know, really what I set out for as a kid. And, you know, being able to buy a house at a young age and use that to fund my career and to be in the position I'm in now, I'm like, it's just been a great path that's happened with the help of so many amazing people. And so, yeah, once I do this big jump, I feel like I think then it probably gets more dangerous for me, because then like, now what do I do, you know? And I don't want to be stuck trying to chase those highs, because essentially that'll take you out. You know, I think if you can't feel compassion and comfortable in your own skin and feel at peace just by sitting in your own presence, then you're missing something. And I think the meditation and turn the mind off has allowed me to really be able to feel comfortable in my own skin, because if your mind's running flat out and you haven't got that organized up there, then it's going to be hard for you to feel comfortable. But once you get, it's a hard thing for people to do. They don't want to, they always want to have music going or TV entertaining them. And to be able to just be, I look forward to being able to get some quiet time, you know, like it's really a beautiful thing when you're able to sit there and it just, it's refreshing. It recharges you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you're mindful of like the direction you want to go and all this other chatter and all these things that happen around you aren't going to shake what your direction is, then you're able to navigate through all these crazy things and stay centered.
Yeah.
And that's been a hard thing. To stay centered has been hard, especially like, you know, if you're working up for an event and then COVID happens and it quits the event, then it creates all these
chaos,
people, self-destruct. And if all your eggs aren't in that one basket and some of your eggs are in the self-growth basket, then that's, that you're always going to be working on that.
So yes,
I love having self-growth is one of my biggest focuses. And the older I get, the more emphasis I put on that, because self-growth is being happy and being comfortable. And one thing I wish for everyone is to be able to find that comfortability in their own skin, because everyone's beautiful. Everyone's amazing.
Hi, everybody. I'm super excited to announce that one of my favorite companies in the world, Bioptimizers, has a brand new amazing product called Blood Sugar Breakthrough. And boy, is that needed. Wade, I wanted you to come on and tell us how your new product works.
Well, basically, we've combined a wide variety of products that help manage blood sugar and help dispose glucose into your muscle tissues as opposed into your fat tissues. And basically, by improving your insulin sensitivity and depositing sugar in a way that enhances your health, you will be able to have better workouts, better lean body mass gains, get leaner more easy, and have that more steady blood sugar rate without the rises and dips, which is associated with, you know, blood sugar poor management.
That's excellent. What's the discount for Living 4D listeners, and where do they get it?
Well, if you go to bloodsugarbreakthrough.health/living4D and put in Paul10, you'll get a 10% discount. And if it doesn't impress you better than any other blood sugar product you've ever tried, you get 100% of your money back.
Hey, that's a no-risk purchase for an amazing product. And believe me, my track record with Bioptimizers products is 100% satisfaction. Never had anybody complain to me, and I highly doubt you will, but I'd love to hear your feedback. Thank you, Wade. I'm excited about the new product.
It's interesting you're here today, because Saturday I had my rock and soul workshop, which is where I bring people in. And for a half a day, I teach them how to connect to their soul. And then I give them exercises where they go let their soul guide them to building something out of stone. And then in the afternoon, we do the work out. So the first half is working in and the second half is working out. So they get the best of both worlds. But I'm bringing this up just because I'm curious, you know, since I taught you how to have a relationship with your soul and get guidance from your soul, how has that changed you on the inside? Like, how is that, what does that relationship feel like for you?
It reaffirms to me that I'm in the right place, doing the right things. You know, sometimes I have deja vu and I feel like that's like I've kind of been there and lived it before. I actually, like, especially after a head injury, sometimes it hits you so hard that you kind of have this awareness, like, I almost knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like a very interesting thing that I get. But yeah, essentially, I just feel comfort in asking my soul the questions. You know, like when I did this video with Red Bull and Tyler Bierman, my teammate, we did this thing called Red Bull Ducked Out. So you can look it up on YouTube. Anyone wants to see it, Red Bull Ducked Out. And we ride through LA. And we kind of beat the traffic is the whole scheme of the thing. We got permission with the rolling police block to be able to rip around the streets of LA. And I wanted to give it that little Robbie Madison kind of, you know, signature, this, and I wanted to do something cool and different that was unexpected. And when I went and looked at locations, I found the first street bridge and there was a jump off the bridge down into the culvert. And it was about 50 feet down. There was to like a hard concrete bank and the angle wasn't quite right. It was a bit shallow. So I knew it was going to be a hard landing. And when I was looking at the jump, I was looking over the edge of the bridge. So I was looking down, I was like, oh yeah, that's doable. But once we made the platform for me to ride on and I stood on the platform, now it's 6 feet higher.
Oh.
And it looked totally different. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure whether it actually was like my ramp builder. I saw his face. I was walking up there and I said, what does it look like, Matt? And he just looked over at me and just, he just gave me this look of like, he did not want to mess with it. And I could tell he didn't want me to jump off it. And I went and looked up and he's like, I don't know if you want to do this. And I looked over and I was like, oh yeah. And so I literally at that point, kind of, I felt the fear go through me and I closed my eyes and I said, soul, am I worthy of doing this jump? And I got a yes answer. And I said, am I okay to do this jump today? Got another yes answer. I asked it multiple times because I wasn't sure and I kept getting this positive answer from my soul. And so I just based it all off of that. I was like, you know, it's telling me green light, so I'm just going to go for it. And then I, you know, stayed mindful. I was like, all right, what do I know? I'm like, I've jumped off that building in Vegas. I know that when you go off a drop, you don't want to go too fast because it takes you a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I had to go slow. So I was mindful of that. I was mindful of the technique and I knew to roll it in a gear higher from my past experiences. So it wasn't a matter of just like, oh yeah, I got a green light. I can just ride off there. Like I had to be so focused and so mm-hmm. like, and I had to put all my past learnings into practice.
Yes.
But once I knew I had to do that, I kind of was like, I'm good to go now. And I did a couple of runs and I'm like, all right, I'm good. And they're like, we don't expect you to tell us when you're going to go or not. We'll just roll. And I'm like, oh no, I'll tell you when I'm going to go. And they thought I wouldn't be able to handle the pressure of saying, yes, it's going to be now or no. I'm like, well, I have to make that decision with myself anyway. So once I make that decision with myself, I'm happy to let you all know. So I was like, all right, guys, it's Robbie. Like I was silent while I did it on practice and I tapped on the radio. Hey guys, it's Robbie here. I'm going to go now in 5 seconds. And I just waited, took a breath, took a beat, resetted myself and rode up and one last breath. And it's like, here we go. And just rode off there. And it worked for me. You know, I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have gone any higher. Like my wheels broke all the spokes in the front wheel, broke all the spokes in the back wheel. The majority of the spokes are broken both wheels. So it was kind of only half wheel. And as I rolled out of it, I skipped over the water. I got to the other side of the water and the wheels totally disintegrated and my forks hit the ground. The bike collapsed and the other guy was like, I said, don't ride off there. Like only one of us needs to go off.
Yeah.
So Tyler didn't go off there, but he did another badass jump and they both contributed to each other and we did a really cool piece. But having that guidance from the universe lets me know, because I ask it, I check in all the time, you know, and it's great for you, because then when you're eating something that's not good for you, you ask yourself, should I be eating it? It's like a no answer. You're like, oh, I've already bought it, I'm going to eat. But then it's like, now I carry some weight with me, so I've got to work it off, get the balance. But it's but the mindfulness definitely, once you know that this is like your little buddy with you that keeps telling you, you know, you're doing good, you're doing good. And if you're able to check in with that, you're able to get reassurance from the greater spirit that you're on the right path. And
yeah.
And that right there lets me know daily that I'm in the right place at the right time. So then once I know that, I don't have to worry about anything else. And it's nice to be able to turn all the rest of the stresses off, because if you listen, this is the only person you got to please is your spirit, your soul. And I feel like if you're doing that, and then you that level of mindfulness, then you know you're unshakable, because you're trying your hardest. You're doing God's work.
That you know, and I think anyone that listens to my podcast knows what God I'm talking about. And just you could say you're doing love's work. You're doing the work of higher consciousness. You're doing the work of unity. You're doing the work of wholeness. You're doing the work of growth. One question I'd like to ask you that I don't have on my list, but I just thought it might be fun to talk about this for a couple of minutes with you. How, what's your feeling about the use of plant medicines? How has that helped you? How is that, has there been challenges? How do you feel about plant medicines in your own life and their applications?
I think plant medicines, depends how they use. I think they're used in the right way, they can be very healing. If you use anything in excess, it's too much. You know, I've used traditional medicine that's like made in chemicals. And I felt their benefits, especially painkillers and stuff like that. I'm not on any meds, you know, at the moment, and I'm not usually someone's on meds. Sometimes I take them when I have surgeries and stuff like that. But as far as the plant based, I think that all our answers are in the ecosystem that's around us. And
yeah.
And I know that I've had huge, I mean, I'm all for it. I think that there's something in nature for us, and there's a cure for everything. And, you know, my experience with DMT really opened and shed layers and made me see the world in a whole different spectrum. And but yeah, I'm but for the the most part, I find a lot of my tension release comes from just breathing. You know, I think one thing that people don't do enough is breathe properly, and you can get high on your own supply. And it's I've had those, you know, where you breathe enough where I have like the whole body tremors and stuff, but it's powerful stuff, and you can do the body can do incredible things, as you know, and as we all demonstrate. And it's just cool to get inspiration off all these incredible people around us and put it to good work.
People don't realize it takes an entire universe to make a body. You know, everything's involved. You say, okay, well, the sun's involved, and somebody might say, well, how's the rest of the universe involved? And I say, well, where do you think the sun came from? It was once the dust and the particles from a star that exploded at the end of its life. And what you think of as our sun is probably the combination of millions of other suns that gathered through the gravitational force of a black hole and then was brought into a birth canal. So the further you look into it, the more you realize that every one of us is a product of the entire universe. And when a person realizes that, then the first thing we can do is turn to the universe for guidance. Just like when you're a little kid and you need help, you turn to your mother for guidance because she is your universe at that point, you know? So I think if we look to nature first, you know, it's like, it's so sad for me because the medical, you know, the Hippocratic Oath is first do no harm. And if the medical system actually would practice the Hippocratic Oath, they wouldn't give you a bunch of toxic, dangerous drugs and chemo and surgery first. They would say, are you eating well? Do you know how to breathe? Do you know how to move your body? Are you stretching? Do you, you know, the kind of the basic stuff everybody should be learning. But no, let's just throw you right into some chemotherapy and
give you some more toxicity,
give you some
toxic
opiates and get you really fucking addicted and make tons of goddamn money off you. And you know, statistically speaking, research shows that the average person in a terminal care ward spends their life savings in the last 5 days of their life because the hospitals throw every single test that they can throw at them while the family is, you know,
willing to do anything
on their
to save
knees.
Them. Yeah.
But they all, most of them all know they're going to die. So it's just they just rack the bill up. And I've seen it happen over and over again. It happened to Penny's father when he was in the hospital, pretty much just exhausted his life savings in the last several days of his life running tests. You know, Penny wasn't there. It was his girlfriend that was giving the nod. But, you know, I've seen this just over and over and over again. And I watch this and I say, you know, if we had a real medical system instead of a drug-pushing system, we would have to go straight to Mother Nature, and then we would really honor and revere Mother Nature instead of just exhausting the shit out of it to, you know, like, I'm all for legalization of pot, but when you start destroying the planet to grow piles of pot, now you're doing the same thing they did to cereal grains and everything else, and then you lose the quality, and it just becomes, now you're abusing the plant. So I think we have to find the balance, and I don't think we're going to find that balance until we realize that Mother Nature is our mother, and she is the deity that we have to protect out of love and respect. And that just turning everything into a commercial product. I mean, imagine if all of a sudden mushrooms were legal. Well, everybody and their dog would be growing mushrooms. And the next thing you know, the quality of it goes down, the spirituality of it goes down. So I think sometimes, I think things not being so readily available makes them more sacred, because then you have to go on a journey to find it. And then when you ask your soul to guide you to that, then you might end up in another country, you might end up in another state, but inevitably you're going to meet people and have experiences that you couldn't have had if you just walked to the drugstore and bought some cheesy ass stuff that of course is now owned by a drug company. So anyhow, I was just curious.
Yeah. One thing I noticed when my mother-in-law passed of cancer, we were looking into how to save her life, right? And I saw some malpractices happening in the Australian system, and they just didn't do we got educated on how to do it, and you should do a genetic test first. And they didn't do the genetic test, so they gave her something that they could have realized wasn't right for her, and ultimately it took her down. But one of my friends his dad had cancer. He was stage 4 terminal. He went to the City of Hope here in California. They put him on a plant-based diet, got him working out, drinking water, cut all this stuff out of his diet, and now he's in remission and no cancer in his body. So
yep.
It shows you what, you know, eat, move.
And be healthy.
be healthy.
Yeah.
No, it's, and your practice is just, you know, you already know this, but just, you know, they inspire me so much because I see through myself when I don't take care of myself, how I feel and how I act and perform. And when I do take care of myself and do be mindful of what I eat and how I sleep and what I, you know, take into the body, it totally changes, you know, the output, how you work, how you function. You know, there's so much more clarity and
how you recover.
Strength and recovery and inflammation and, you know, getting rid of this, you know, the belly and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, but it's something that I'm still trying to get that wave of balance right because, you know, it's how we are, right?
It's always, you know, balancing is a moving target. You see, if you, you know, perfection is dead because you can't improve it, right?
Yeah.
So there's a spiritual concept that I learned from studying Fred Allen Wolf's work. He and it's a Buddhist concept called dukkha. I think it's D-U-K-K-H-A. But it really translates to necessary imbalance. And he shows in his book, The Spiritual Universe, which if you haven't read is a fucking good book, The Spiritual Universe by Fred Allen Wolf. But he talks about how that the universe is built with a necessary imbalance because it's constantly moving. If it was in perfect balance, then there would be no life because you have to have movement to have time. You have to have space, time, and movement to be conscious. You couldn't have an experience without movement. And if you had no movement, you'd have no time. So if something's perfect, you can't do anything with it. So it's frozen in time. So the point I'm making is that we're always having to, you know, regain our balance. We, you know, one minute you're busy working, then you have some time off, and then it's easy to, you know, get busy with sweet stuff and more pot, and because you say, oh, I got, you know, time off, but then next thing you know, you're starting to feel like, okay, I'm overdoing it, so I got to balance that. And you know, it's, you got to balance sex, you got to balance play, you got to balance work, you got to balance creativity. And so the what I call dynamic balance is just learning, and this is why values are so important. If you say, okay, my value is I don't let myself get to the point where I can't see my abdominals. If my washboard goes away, that means I'm eating wrong or I'm making the wrong decisions or I'm bullshitting myself too much. Or if I go to the gym for 3 workouts in a row and I feel tired before I even begin, it means I'm doing something wrong and I better look at my life instead of making excuses. So if we don't have values so that we create a parameter, you know, it's like when you're on a ramp, you know, you can't go off either edge.
Yeah.
Right. As long as you set the parameters for their own choices, they just wander around aimlessly and blow in the wind like a leaf. And then they get all upset when they find out that they got a disease or their wife wants a divorce or whatever, but they didn't realize they were just flying unconsciously and banging into shit. And then, you know, the pain teacher comes to help you find your balance.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. And that's one thing that you've helped me get on top of is the balance. You know, you taught me to be mindful, taught me to the 4 doctors, you mm-hmm. know, and then just the whole growth and what you're about has helped me so much. So thank you, brother.
It's well, I thank awesome. You, man. Thank you so much for just doing it. And it's just, God, it's just, you know, I have so much respect and reverence for you because you really are an amazing example of what a human being can do, and
thank you, bro.
Overcoming your fear and constantly growing and inspiring so many people and managing being a dad and a husband and a creator and an inventor and moving, you know, to do what you do, you have to have a lot of technical knowledge. I mean, you got to know a lot about mechanics, about hydrodynamics, aerodynamics. I mean, you know, if someone really studied all the things you do, they'd realize, wow, you know, you have to have a freaking lot of inspiration and motivation to study and learn and to seek out people. And I think that's what we really should all be inspiring our children to do and each other to do. Otherwise, the world just becomes flat and we need a COVID to bring us together.
Yeah.
Right? We need a COVID to give us a devil to fight. And so unconsciously, if we don't create consciously together, then we're unconsciously drawn into our darkness together. And I think if more people studied people like you, they would realize that when the darkness comes, it's an invitation to turn on the light, but you got to turn it on.
Yeah.
Amazing. I feel blessed to have gotten to share the day with you and gotten to share my new home with you. And
yeah, it's been an awesome day. Thank you so much.
Yeah, some food and some smoke. And where can people, where's the best place for people to go to find anything you want to offer, from seeing your videos to buying your clothes to anything like that?
Just Robbie Madison on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. You know, we've got a great team with Ryan and Leo and the crew. We're doing all my social media stuff, and we're just trying to build a home there. We're going to start pumping out our YouTube content here pretty soon, which I'm excited about, because I want to give people the side of me they haven't seen. Like, I've always done stuff where it's like a Red Bull event or a DC, you know, or Skull Candy or whatever, these bigger things I've done, ESPN, and they see these big feats I do, but they don't get to see life as our family behind the scenes.
Right.
And so we're going to give them that on the YouTube
channel.
That's
great.
So they'll get to see like me interacting with my kids, going and doing these stunts, you know, the lifestyle, the balance of the family, you know, before, when I leave, when dad goes away, when dad comes back, and then everything I do on the road, and, you know, being just everything we got to do to be prepared, and all the people that, I mean, all these amazing people that help me do what I do. I mean, it's always a team effort. I'm such a product of all the amazing people around me. So
I think that's fantastic.
I'm so stoked.
Because it lets people see the process. It lets people see how much work it is behind the scenes. You know, when I used to be a stock car racer, it used to irritate me that people loved it so much when a driver would have a really bad accident.
Mm.
And I'm like, do you realize how much work that is? Like, I've had to work all night long for a race the next day because my car was so damaged. And I said, if you really realized how much effort we put into these cars and how much money we put in the cars, you wouldn't be clapping your hands because some guy just got his car totaled. You'd be running down there to say, is there something I can do to help?
Yeah.
You know, right. Instead of, oh, wow, man, that got really fucked up. You know, it's like, oh, shit, you need to wake up. And the point is when people invest their time and their energy in creating something meaningful and something bigger than themselves, and they see something like that happen, they have a lot of empathy and they say, wow, you know, let's see how we can help this guy out, even if it's just prayers or intentions of love and support. But I think sharing that kind of stuff really helps people learn what's involved in being successful.
Yeah. And I want to share the human side of it, you know, like just in taking it all in, you know, when you go to somewhere, give them back to the local people. You know, I want to be able to have my own shirt so I can stoke little kids out and give them a shirt, you know, and inspire them to be their best. And just be someone, a family culture that people would be like, I want to be a part of that dream, of that brand, because I believe like what they're about, and we're here to have fun and emit love and just, yeah.
Thank you so much for an amazing time, an amazing day. I'm going to try to get myself to come visit you with my kids, and
that'd be awesome.
Let my son go crazy with your kids,
and I can jump all check into my phone pit.
Yes, you can jump me.
You can jump you.
Yeah,
I'll guide you.
Okay.
Oh no, we can just we can chill by the pool if we need to.
Yeah, I'll see what my soul says.
yeah. We'll definitely do some breathing with the kids though, and
yeah,
we'll work
we
out.
Can do
great.
All sorts of stuff. Yeah, so. Well, I hope you guys all enjoyed this. Robbie's one of the most amazing people I've ever known and worked with, so I'm glad I got to share him with you for my 150th episode. Thank you to all my sponsors for all their love and support. They're amazing people, and they have amazing, sustainable companies that really do things that support the earth and support each of you. And so also thank you for any purchases you make with the sponsors, because a little piece of that goes to me to help cover the cost of running the podcast and supporting me, so I have the time to do the work to find the people and do the prep work and get everything ready. So I'm very grateful for all of your support. If you love the podcast, share it. If you didn't, it's our secret. Lots of love.
Thank you for listening to Living 4D with Paul Check and today's guest, Robbie Madison. Connect with Robbie on Instagram and Facebook at Robbie Madison, or visit his website at robbiemadison.com. Check out the YouTube version of this podcast at youtube.com/living4D with Paul Check to see videos of Robbie in action. Follow Paul Check on Instagram at paul.check or on Twitter at paulcheck. You can watch more on Paul's blog at paulchecksblog.com and get your free subscription to Czech videos and more at the Czech Institute's new media site, czechiva.com. Remember, you can read the show notes and find links to the resources mentioned in this episode at czechinstitute.com/podcast.